It is everywhere. From the news programming to the media headlines to the political speeches to the education initiatives. It's on the posters on the trains, it's in the articles that you read, it's in the text messages you are sent. You are right to feel that something is not right. You are right to feel that you are being manipulated. Behavioural science changes behaviour and views by influencing and nudging your unconscious mind. Governments and institutions globally have engaged behavioural teams with the prime purpose of altering your decisions and behaviours. It may feel easier to ignore what's going on, but the only way to reduce its influence and break the chains is to think consciously about what and why. Listen to your intuition. It is telling you something is amiss. You are right.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Hey, November 4th, 2021. Thank you for joining me today. I have a fantastic show laid out for you, riddled with terrible things and bad things your government are trying to do to you, but a good show nonetheless because it is coming to light. You are making a difference. Those of you in the chat, everybody helping this show, anybody out there fighting for what we're talking about today, we are making a difference. I hope we feel that today. And we're going to go over some things that to really highlight how many different facets of this illusion are falling apart at the seams. And they're just ignoring it. That's what I was talking about with somebody earlier before the show, is that before all of this, we've discussed in the past things like 9/11, for instance, or even before that, because 9/11 is sort of a similar example today. That there's been these, you know, conspiracy theories that were, you know, hinged on one person's understanding or findings they found or leaked document, and it gets dismissed and attacked and it's not real, or, and that's it. And that's the one leg they kick out, and we're all hung up on it, even though, you know, it's true is the point, but they just ignore it. Well, today it's not like that. We're not looking at some fringe document, some leaked thing that we can't verify. There's a endless stream of real-time scientific data coming from some of the most highly regarded publications out there. And they're just being ignored. I'll go over three of them to start the show today, reasonably start the show today. But everything we've done on this show since the beginning of this has been peer-reviewed research, or, you know, even preprint research that's showing you that they're finding new things that are challenging the narrative, and nobody talks about it. There's some nefarious, sinister things. There are some nefarious, sinister things happening around all of this. I believe it's driving it. But all that you need to come to terms with, if you're still trying to figure out what's happening here, is that you're being lied to. Why? It's not even the right question to ask if you're just understanding you're being lied to. Understand that you're being deceived, and then dig in and find out in what way, and understand, you know, the way that that's changing your perspective of what's happening. We never really get to the meat of why, the intentions behind it. Look at the JFK discussion. Every time there's a new president, oh, we're going to drip out some new data, new information, reveal the whole thing, and then not even close to that happens. Because they're never going to tell you. Because it's the same point. The same people responsible, the same entities responsible, rather. So today we're going to dive through this stuff and break it down yet again, day after day, and continue to show you what's really going on and give you the source material to argue this for yourself. Now, the title makes it very clear. Right out of the gate, the show today, right out of the gate, we're going to talk about two main things, three studies, in fact, showing you that this is hurting your body, that this is, that in fact, the vaccinated are showing to have higher viral load and even more transmission, and even, I mean, in every possible way, every category you can point to at this point, you're seeing the problem centered around the vaccinated. And we're going to go through a lot of the stuff we typically do, such as the side effects, the things that are happening, or excuse me, the effects of the vaccine, the children that are being forced to take it now, despite the fact that there's a lot of issues other than the fact that they shouldn't be taking it, they're not at risk, that there's issues with what's already being delivered, even though they don't have what they're supposed to yet. Now, how does that make sense? And we'll finish and get into a little more about the community discrepancies and talk about that today as well. But to start off, I want to give a shout out to the video you saw in the beginning from Panda. Nick Hudson's actually been interviewed by Taylor Hudak for TLAV. The interview is on our website if you want to check it out. Panda is a great out group that's basically trying to get to the truth of this with statistics and show you that information. As you can see, this says you are right. You are right to feel that something is not right. You are right to feel that you are being manipulated. I thought that was a great opening. I mean, even somebody even jokingly called it like positive propaganda. That's not even a negative term, right? I mean, it doesn't have to. The point is, it's all truthful, and that's all that matters. And it's just, if you're reaching these people that are lost with an emotional video, as much as I actively talk about not using emotion, I mean, it's a positive end game. And I agree with that. That's not something I'm going to go out and make videos like this, but I think that's a positive thing. And this is good stuff, because maybe, just maybe, it will reach one more person. Because, you know, I do feel that way. But the problem is that they may not realize that they're part of a larger majority and still stay quiet because they're scared. But on that note, before we jump right into those studies, I just want to show you something that I saw today that I think is really interesting. That doesn't mean it's even necessarily valid because of just how much political nonsense is flying around this topic. I believe it is because of all the stuff that has existed before we ever got to this. For those on the podcast, the title reads, DEA agent charged in MAGA riot, otherwise known as the event that happened on January 6th, and there were some violent things that happened, tells Tucker Carlson an FBI informant urged him to break into the Capitol. The Army veteran faces 15 years prison despite never entering the building. So again, you know, if somebody was there filming this as a, you know, let's just say a left-leaning news outlet, well, they're not in trouble. But if you were there filming it in the same way as a right-leaning outlet, there were people like that that were arrested. Is that not subjective? Are you just by default a negative entity because you're on one side or the other? Well, that's how they're trying to frame this. My point in showing you this is simply that we already know there were FBI agents there, that they've admitted they were at the leading ends of two different militia groups. We knew that there was a psychological operations agent, or rather entity there from the Navy. She says she wasn't there on off duty, whatever. There's a lot of this that was popping up, as well as the guy that was screaming, "Let's go to the Capitol," that's never been arrested, even though it was the most scathing and research. You know, they make it out to be that they went after everybody they could possibly find, and yet that guy wasn't arrested. There's a lot going on here. I think the takeaway, as always, kind of the original point at the beginning of the show, you'll never, this is a psyop, guys. I hope we can see that by now. You will never really get to the bottom of this unless everything falls apart and somebody, and they all go to jail, which almost never happens. So at the end of the day, walk away going, we're being deceived. As usual, both sides are trying to play at this to a different degree. Republicans are over here trying to make it look like absolutely nothing, while the Democrats are trying to make it look like an insurrection, and it's usually somewhere in the middle. And that's the problem. But nonetheless, recognize that you're being deceived, probably, and I would even admit more so on the right, left side of this two-party illusion, but it's all leading in the same direction, because you know who's not stopping what's really being driven? Neither side. The Republicans, the Democrats, or, you know, the actual majority are not stopping what's coming. And that's the ultimate point there. Now, keeping that in mind, realize the same dynamic is taking place in the COVID-19 illusion. Both sides, regardless of, we'll get into the Rand Paul Fauci discussion right after this, because it is relevant and it's very cathartic, to be honest, to watch it happen. But at the end of the day, is it just Fauci and China? No. If you think that, it's very, very naive of you. There's a lot more going on that includes both sides of the aisle, all of the government, in fact, and multiple governments. But we see this happening right in front of us. So the whole dynamic of making it seem like a one thing or the other is what this is all about. And it's all of it, guys. Because at the end of the day, if it leads into the vaccine passports and the infrastructure and the same thing, which it's all going to do to one degree or another, which, and by the way, multiple Republican leaders are pushing the same concept. The vaccine itself was driven aggressively by Trump to begin. Well, we can see how this all goes, and it keeps you fighting back and forth. But here is a study from October 26th, from Nature, nature.com, as you can see right up here, which, just in case you, oh, I don't know why that's not, there it goes. Oh, I forgot. You can't zoom up top. So there's the URL, nature.com, but it's Cell Discovery, which is one of their many kind of offshoots, but Nature is one of the most highly regarded scientific publications out there. October 26th. I know it's shocking that the media hasn't found this between then, right? Between this week that's passed, it's like they don't even look for it. It's crazy. The title reads, comprehensive investigations revealed consistent pathophysiological alterations after vaccination with COVID-19 vaccines. This is a very, very, very important article, study, that is showing you not multiple things. One that's been found in multiple studies, many on nature and science themselves, dismissed, which keep finding that they are altering your genes, altering your DNA makeup. These things have been found multiple times in studies. They just keep ignoring it, acting like it's undefined. We don't know for sure. And it's, except that they have a lot of we don't know for sure's on their side that mean everything, right? This is obvious, and it's been obvious. But on top of that, it comes to a very interesting conclusion, which I put right in the title today, that it leads to the diminishing of your immune system. Now, this is a really important topic that I'm going to dive into more in the coming week, most likely. I reached out to James Lyons Weiler to possibly have him on the show about this interesting HIV crossover, the concept, Luc Montagnier's arguments about what we're looking at here, and as well as a lot of different things, polyethylene glycol and the injections and how they were adding or increasing. And there's a lot of stuff I want to talk to him about. But the interesting thing here is this, you know, what seems to be couched in the bioweapon conversation, which it, obviously for clear reasons. But there's more going on there. This ties to that. The immune system being, I mean, obviously, if this is supposed to be keeping you healthy, if it diminishes your immune system, we can't pretend that that makes sense, even remotely. So here's what it finds. Abstract first, then we'll read more in depth. And this is really an interesting point on top of that to show you how different the abstract can be from the more the elaboration throughout the article. That's important to remember because a lot of the mainstream happen. They just read the abstract or read the bullet points and they just report it as fact and they pretend that's what we're doing. I read these things from top to bottom. I mean, I shouldn't say that always because sometimes they're crazy long, but these I do or I did. So it says large scale COVID-19 vaccinations are currently underway in many countries in response to the COVID pandemic. Here we report besides generation of neutralizing antibodies, which nobody's disagreeing with that. The point is that these injections do create antibodies, at least so we're told, so their data shows, but then their data also shows an immediate, what was the term they used? Somebody in the chat can remind me what the term that we just talked about. Rapidly decreases after the second dose, rapidly. Within 2 months, the Israeli data showed you this is like dropped off a cliff. Okay, so, and don't forget your natural immunity, which most of you have out there if you haven't taken this shot, is robust, durable, lasting, possibly the rest of your life, T-cell, memory B, CD8, all of it. Multiple variants, we'll actually make that point again today. So, besides neutralizing antibodies, which people will point to and say, see, it works, but that's not what that means if it dies off immediately, and that's only one part of a multifaceted way that you keep yourself healthy. On top of that, though, it says we report consistent alterations in hemoglobulin A1C, serum sodium and potassium levels, coagulation profiles, and renal functions in healthy volunteers after vaccination with an inactivated SARS-CoV-2 vaccine. That's bad stuff, in case you didn't catch that. Coagulation profiles, renal, this is bad, negative effects that they're seeing in a very large way in the people participating who have been injected. Now, it's a single-cell mRNA sequencing of peripheral blood mononuclear cells, PBMCs, before and 28 days after the first inoculation also revealed consistent alterations in gene expression of many different immune cell types. Alterations in gene expression. Remember when this was a fake news story? There's been multiple studies, as I continue to tell you, and nature.com will always have its source material. You can read it for yourself. Multiple studies before this have found that this is very clearly altering your genetic makeup. They don't want you to know that. Also recognize the reduction of CD8 T cells. You know who just talked about this? Oh, shoot. Now I'm going to forget who. Peter McCullough, I believe, was one of them. And somebody else I referenced. I think it was Dr. Ryan. They're clearly telling you guys that the reduction of this is why people are getting all these other infections and getting all, I mean, we're going to get to a point today about why these hospitals seemingly are overwhelmed in places like Australia, despite the fact that most are injected and they only seem to have had 1,000 cases all said and done since this started. Yet somehow their hospitals are overwhelmed. It's not COVID. What is it then? They say, we don't know. I bet you know. The reduction of CD8 T cells on top of the vaccine effects are creating other opportunities for illness and infection. And then you wear the mask and increases your risk of bacterial pneumonia and other infections. And what do you know? It's a presto bango perfect. You know, it's obvious where it's going. You couldn't have made this a better scenario to make people get sick. That's why I think this is more sinister at some level. But it says, moreover, the RNA sequencing revealed increased NFKB signaling and reduced type 1 interferon responses. which were confirmed by biological assays and also had been reported to occur after SARS-CoV-2 infection with aggravating symptoms altogether, which again, that kind of indicates that this is the injection is basically causing, at the very least, exactly the same problem as COVID-19, which otherwise would be COVID-19, especially since we already talked about the video that I've played many times, the Dr. Bean and his breaking news, breaking study that came out about how they're treating long haul, but also how they're seeing long haul in people who were injected who've never had COVID-19. That's it's very important to understand that this is a huge discussion that they are actively keeping from your view. And since I'm bringing it up, I'll just grab it over here because you know me, I keep my tabs up all over the place. Here's the study, the video about the study and all the information's in there, spike proteins and immune cells. They go on to talk about the very clear reality that they're treating people for long haul COVID despite never having COVID and only having the injection. And he said, as far as we can tell, it is COVID-19. Not that he thinks it is, but like from a scientific standpoint, it's they're the same thing. So it just shows you that this is causing that. At the very least, as I said before, looks the same. So what's the difference? If it's making people sick, it's making people sick. But it doesn't matter, by the way, but in this context at this point. Now it says, altogether, our study recommends additional caution when vaccinating people with pre-existing clinical conditions, including diabetes, electrolyte imbalances, renal dysfunction, and coagulation disorders. So this seems to make it sound like, okay, well, this is a small group of people who, well, it's not really a small group, to be quite honest, all those conditions put together with just, I mean, that there's, it's the very least, this is not being told to people. But now thinking about this compared to the abstract, compared to what I'm going to get into at the bottom of this, it's very different. And realize that it makes it a lot more dangerous for everybody kind of sentiment. And here's what it says. I'll read it to you myself, as always. Results indicated that vaccination, in addition to simulating the generation of neutralizing antibodies, similar so far, also influenced various health indicators, including those related to diabetes, renal function, cholesterol metabolism, coagulation problems, electrolyte imbalance, in a way as if the volunteers experienced an infection. That is really interesting. So just even just those, the reading of those is much, it's not just like sort of side problems. It's saying results indicated that vaccination influenced various health indicators, including things like diabetes, renal dysfunction, cholesterol, coagulation problems. I don't know, like blood clots, right? So this is leading to these issues, but they experienced them in such a way as if they had an infection. Maybe they did. Maybe this is just the spike protein leading to creating the very thing that we're talking about. Or maybe there's a combination of things because the mask can lead to that. Again, the science is here for you to look at. Ask yourself why nobody's talking about these kind of things outside of the independent media. Are they getting an infection? And if so, why does that even make sense? Well, probably because we're not even dealing with a vaccination here. We're dealing with gene therapy, with all sorts of weird things that are causing your body to react while you're wearing things and doing things that increase your risk of infection dramatically. It's not too hard to put together. Now, it says the RNA sequence of PBMCs from volunteers before and after vaccination revealed dramatic changes in immune cell gene expression. Not maybe kind of some here. Before and after, these people had dramatic changes. Now, as I always point out, these studies don't use things like this very lightly. When they say it's a specific and severe risk, that's what it means. They will always use the half-hearted language. If they say a dramatic change in your immune cell gene expression, it's a pretty big deal. It says not only echoing some of the clinical laboratory measures, but also suggestive of increased NFKB-related inflammatory responses. This all adds up with exactly what we're all seeing and exactly what they're pretending isn't happening. Then it says, which turned out to be mainly taking place in classical monocytes. Type 1 interferon responses, supposedly beneficial against COVID-19, were downregulated after vaccination. Good. So it seeming multiple ways is doing the very thing it shouldn't do to make you not get sick. Together, these data suggested, and this is important, think about the difference between this last part and the beginning. Together, all the data they're discussing in this article, the parts that I read to you, suggested that after vaccination, at least by day 28, other than generation of neutralizing antibodies, people's immune systems, including those of lymphocytes and monocytes, were perhaps in a more vulnerable state. That's pretty damn clear. So the problems that they're creating are leading to your immune system being diminished. That's pretty obvious. And that lines up with everything else we're seeing. Now, tack this on top of the fact that we're seeing negative effects after injection. There's side effects, problems that are happening. Then it diminishes your immune system, and then it continues. So 4 months, 6 months down the line, you're getting other problems that they just associate with long this or something else or not even related to any of this, but it all ties back to what this is doing to your body, or it can at the very least, is always the point that you should have a choice. If this is possible, or any of the other 100,000 things we pointed out that they're ignoring are possible, any one of them, you have a right to make a choice. If there's risk, there should be choice. I don't care if that's 0.01% risk or 100% risk. If there's risk, you should have choice. And they used to think that too, but don't suddenly everything changes when they want something to happen. Final point, and I think this is just ridiculously on the nose, our study postulates that it is imperative to consider the potential long-term impact of vaccination to certain medical conditions or to general human health. I mean, let's just take out that middle part and read this the way that it should be said. Our study postulates that it is imperative to consider the potential long-term impacts of vaccination to general human health. Yeah, that's a little alarming. Maybe we should stop a minute, take a beat, and consider if this is going to be really bad for general human health. Yeah, who's been screaming that? And you know what? This will be ignored like every other thing that we keep pointing to, despite the fact that they're going, trust the science. Is nature.com not science? Is this not a peer-reviewed scientific article? Yeah, all of that, except they don't look at it. They don't care. They hide it from you. They ignore it. Because not every one of these are being pulled back by the editorial team without notifying the scientists, which is ridiculous. Most of them are still there. They're just not talking about it. I don't know how much more clear that could get. Now, the next part of this, taking a note from that exact article, here's the expose pointing something out that I think you should dive into deeply. UK government reports suggest the fully vaccinated are rapidly developing acquired immunodeficiency syndrome, and the immune system decline has now begun in children. Okay, so before, if we'd started with this article, plenty of people might have been like, well, they're just making it, whatever. Dismiss it because they don't like the source. Well, here's nature.com finding the exact same thing, or to finding that it is diminishing your immune system, or that it can. So here, these reports, by the way, expose always doing a great job, or the daily expose, whichever one you remember them as, are doing a great job of citing their source material. And as always, they do it, here. and you can dive through this for yourself. Now, the bottom line is what it says here. Now, I'm not going to go through it. It's a long article. There's a lot of information here. And we basically just went through it more, the point on this article. So I'm probably going to dive in this a bit more if I bring on James Lyons Wyther, but let's read the gist of it. The 8 previous Public Health England, UK Health Security Agency vaccine surveillance reports on COVID-19 cases show that double vaccinated 40 to 79 year olds have now lost 50% of their immune system capability and are consistently losing a further 4 to 5% every week. That's crazy. The data shows you this. Projections also now show that 30 to 49-year-olds will have zero COVID viral defense at best, or a form of vaccine-mediated acquired immunodeficiency syndrome at worst. By the first week in January, and all double vaccinated people over 30 will have completely lost that part of their immune system, which deals with COVID-19 in the next 18 weeks. Now, these are estimations based on the time frame they've already seen of the ebbing and flowing of this process. And they point out that they show that the under 18s seem to be having the worst, at least in this weak situation, the worst. So it seems interesting to me that you have groups on either side of this that are at the most risk, we're told, even though the kids are not, and they seem to be the ones that are having the worst problems from this. It just doesn't add up. Now, you can read through this for yourself, and I highly recommend you do, because the data shows you this. And this is what's interesting, is you can look at the data on their websites, and it shows you exactly what we're talking about, but weirdly enough, they don't point to it. Their conclusion says something different. We are living through a constant psyop. They are lying to you in every possible way. Now, here's the crazy part. I don't believe that every single person around this are all part of the lie. There's a centralized grouping at the top. Let's just make it as extreme as possible. It's probably more nuanced than this, but just to take the CDC, the FDA, there could very realistically be one person at the top of this outfit that is completely in the know about how we're being deceived and that it's sinister. And they're the ones manipulating this and trickling it down to their people. And everyone underneath them has been taught from the beginning of their entire career, I guess, with these groups, that you trust authority. That if the CDC or if your boss tells you, well, that's the fact, and you run from there. And then you do your due diligence, but you take that at face value. And it trickles down from there. The people beneath them only know what they need to know to execute their job, but they think they know everything. This is basic centralization from the top down. So if we're looking at stuff like this, you have to realize that there are people that actually don't realize this. They don't see this data because they're not looking for it. So they run with the narrative. They think that they're doing the right thing. And they argue it aggressively and think we're crazy. But there is a level of naivety for them, willful, for not looking at the data that we're shoving in their face. But nonetheless, this is pretty alarming. And I think we're going to see this pan out in exactly the way that they're suggesting. And it will be blamed on you. Because that's already how they're setting this up, despite the fact that the data says everything in the other direction, which leads us to the next point. Preprint study, October 15th, also ignored by the mainstream media, shedding of infectious SARS-CoV-2 despite vaccination. Now, there's two different things you can talk about in regard to shedding. One of them is the conversation that the mRNA discoverer pointed out, not Malone, he's the inventor of the technology used to create the injections. Dr. Warren, I believe was his name, on Twitter pointed this out and said, yes, absolutely, the spike protein can shed. He did, for full disclosure, he did argue then that it doesn't shed in enough amount to make it a problem. But I argue that he was taking at face value arguments within the data that show that only this little amount comes through, which has been shown to be wildly false. I think with taking the full picture, he already has begun to see that it's much more alarming. Because it's far more than just one little spike protein. This is continuing to be produced. Even going back to the point that Pfizer's own documentation points out that it's a self-amplifying injection. For those who don't know what that is, look it up on our website. We've talked about it in depth. It means it continues to produce spike proteins. It's alarming. This also could be talking about the amount of virus that you are continuing to, your viral load and how much you're coughing on people and so on. Either way you look at this, this completely shatters what they're arguing is the case. Here's what it says. We compared the PCR, and always with the PCR test, so take that with a huge pound of salt. But what they're saying is they compared the PCR cycle threshold data from 699 test positive nasal swab specimens from fully vaccinated people, which all super, super, super rare because it never happens, right? But 699 of them compared with unvaccinated people. Oh, excuse me, that's the total, 699 total. What it says is we observed low cycle threshold values under 25 in 212 of 310 fully vaccinated people. That is 68% of the vaccinated total. And they observed 246 of 389 unvaccinated people. That's 63%. Okay, then it goes on to say, testing a subset of these low samples revealed that infectious SARS-CoV-2 in 15 of 17 specimens. So this is what matters, that they revealed infectious SARS-CoV-2 in 15 of 17 specimens from the unvaccinated, that's 88%, and 37 of 39 from the vaccinated, which is 95%. So before we even get to how infectious they are, it's clear that there were more infectious people when taken with close to half 50-50 in the vaccinated category. Now, they're going to go, well, it's because there's more of them that are, well, not in this case, not in the study that breaks it down 50-50. Then it says, to determine whether infectious virus titers differed, so in your blood, in vaccinated and unvaccinated people, they performed plaque assays on an additional set of 48 samples, finding no difference in infectious virus titers between groups. Okay, so somebody's saying my screen looks blurry. I don't know why that would be. Probably censorship manipulation. Who knows? It's completely HD on my end. So it says no difference. So if you're finding more people who are infectious on the side of the vaccinated in a split study, and then you're finding no difference in the blood samples from the two categories, what are we talking about here? If the studies have shown them with more viral load, 4 to 5 times more in their nose, their argument is, but it's super rare. But that's not true, because the study we just talked about and the mainstream article just discussed this, where they were more transmissible, where we had more places, the top five transmission states of high transmission, four of them are the highest vaccinated places in the country. And adversely, there's a huge portion of the lowest vaccinated that are at the under 10% that are some of the lowest transmission rates. This shows you what they're hiding from you. It is ubiquitous. More viral load, more transmission, more infection, more hospitalization, more death. And we showed you that with the UK data. They just don't want you to see it. Now, remember that there are some people that are trying to point this out to you. We just talked about this. I'll leave this in here just so you can look through it for yourself. We did an entire show on this. Here's the show itself. And this was the day it came out. It's making the rounds the last couple of days on other platforms. It's a crazy mess. Regional director blows whistle on Pfizer's vaccine trial data. Title on BMJ, British Medical Journal. Researcher blows the whistle on the integrity of the data. Data integrity issues in their trials. And it goes on to show you how obviously manipulated this was. They weren't tracking adverse events. They weren't following people. They were giving an injection and putting them in the hallway and not tracking whether they had problems. They weren't following up in 24-hour time frame like they were supposed to. Some of these things went 3-4 days afterward. So it means you lose the actual, this was an intentional way to not actually be able to track this data, in my opinion. Either way, even the British Medical Journal is calling this out, saying that this was, I think this is criminal. They think this was, at the very least, data integrity issues, which means you should not be trusting the data they're using to argue it's safe. As simple as that. Now, Sputnik points this out. Bombshell report in the BMJ raises serious questions on Pfizer vaccine trial. Pfizer falsified data. This is the BMJ. This is what they're talking about. Falsified data. Unblinded patients. Employed poorly trained vaccinators. Was slow to follow up. Not a word from the Western media. That's pretty interesting. Now, I said exactly, not a word, because they don't want you to see this, guys. There's a lot of this happening. There's a lot of information coming out, as I've talked about, that they're just keeping from your view. Now, let's take a dance over into the theater of the absurd, right? The COVID clown world theater, which is otherwise known as Congress. Now, I believe that there is some good stuff happening here, but I also very, very strongly believe, whether Fauci or Rand Paul are aware of it, that this is meant to happen. That's my opinion. I think strongly that Fauci is being laid out as the scapegoat, as the only one responsible, which is childishly naive. It's not. It's just simply impossible with everything we know from multiple administrations. It's absurd to pretend that it was just him and he's lying and everyone, like the NIH took part in the changing of the website definition as well. Like, it's just ridiculous to pretend that it was just him and just China. That's silly. So I think what's happening here is an attempt to keep us in this argument. It very well could be far more than just a leaked something from a lab. I believe that's all. Even if that was how this started, we can see that that's no longer even the point. Another point to point out is that, if we then dig into this bioweapon argument like we were doing back in the beginning and censored for, doesn't it then create the argument that this is real and is dangerous and therefore we should have some kind of injection? And once Fauci's out of the way, it's all good because the bad guy's gone. Let's take the injections. Even Rand Paul and others have argued that there's valid points to that. They bring in natural immunity, but don't worry, then you can use your infrastructure passport, which is also something we should be screaming and running from. So I feel like this is sort of a couch argument that leads us in a dangerous direction. So keep that in mind as we go through this. And I believe I had the file here. Let me grab this so we can watch it. This is Rand Paul. Oh, here, I'll read his tweet first. It's Rand Paul versus Dr. Fauci, round 7. NIH changed the definition of gain of function on the website to try to cover your... he's just reading the quote. So let's watch this. Rand Paul calling out Fauci again in a great way about the EPPP manipulation, which we've already covered on this show.
Today, to admit that you approved of NIH funding for gain of function research in Wuhan, but your repeated denials have worn thin and a majority of Americans frankly don't believe you. Even the NIH now admits that EcoHealth Alliance did perform experiments in Wuhan that created viruses not found in nature that actually did gain in lethality. The facts are clear. The NIH did fund gain of function research in Wuhan despite your protestations. You can deny it all you want, but even the Chinese authors of the paper in their paper admit that viruses not found in nature were created, and yes, they gained in infectivity. Your persistent denials, though, are not simply a stain on your reputation, but are a clear and present danger to the country and to the world. As Professor Kevin Esfeldt of MIT has written, gain-of-function research looks like a gamble that civilization can't afford to risk. And yet here we are again, with you steadfast in your denials.
Quick question. Where were all these people back when they were openly doing this and openly calling it gain of function? Yeah, think about stuff like that. Rand Paul was there. People were around. This was publicly done. Did he just stumble into this topic because the independent media was talking about it? Well, if that is the case, that clearly shows you something about what's really driving discussions. But just think about that. This has always been happening. Suddenly they care. I don't buy that.
Why does it matter? Because gain of function research with laboratory created viruses not found in nature could cause a pandemic even worse the next time. We're suffering today from one that has a mortality of approximately 1%.
Now that's averaged, guys, and that's not accurate. Under 50, no comorbidities, it drops off a cliff. You can't average out all of the most extremely at risk. And by the way, even assuming that that's even accurate, I don't know why we trust anything they're telling us, but based on what they're showing us, you can't average this out. You have to stratify this by age. Otherwise, it's ridiculously wrong. That's why Oxford Calculator puts under 19 at 1 in a million chance of dying. There's no chance that's 1% if it's 1 in a million under 19 for dying or even getting sick. And hospitalizations are also dramatically low, less than the flu for all of it. So 1%, just so we know, that's the averaged out number. So again, he knows that. He's made that point in past arguments, but we still stick with 1%, which makes it seem more dangerous than the flu to the people that aren't understanding this stuff. Again, that's questionable to me.
They're experimenting with viruses that have mortalities of between 15 and 50%. Yes, our civilization could be at risk from one of these viruses. Experiments that combine unknown viruses with known pandemic-causing viruses are incredibly risky. Experiments that combine unknown viruses with coronaviruses that have as much as 50% mortality could endanger civilization as we know it. And here you sit, unwilling to accept any responsibility for the current pandemic and unwilling to take any steps to prevent gain-of-function research from possibly unleashing an even more deadly virus. You mislead the public by saying that the published viruses could not be COVID. Well, exactly no one is alleging that. No one is alleging that the published viruses by the Chinese are COVID. What we are saying is that this was risky type of research, gain-of-function research. It was risky to share this with the Chinese, and that COVID may have been created from a not-yet-revealed virus. We don't anticipate the Chinese are going to reveal the virus if it came from their lab.
Now, that's not actually accurate. There's plenty of people on the Republican side that are arguing aggressively that that is literally COVID-19. That doesn't mean that it's valid or that it's even based in data, but it's not an unreasonable argument. It's not a non-unreasonable argument. You know, you could clearly see that there's a connection there and that maybe the very thing that they were manipulating was exactly what we're talking about. I think the reason that's kind of a sensitive topic is because that then seems to very clearly point back to Fort Detrick, North Carolina, Eagle Health Alliance, you know, so it's an interesting sidestep to a degree. But either way, I think it's a fair point that from congressional standpoint, no one's arguing that this is literally the same thing. So it seems like a sidestep by Fauci.
You know that, but you continue to mislead. You continue to support NIH money going to Wuhan. You continue to say you trust the Chinese scientist. You appear to have learned nothing from this pandemic. Will you today finally take some responsibility for funding gain-of-function research in Wuhan?
Now, before he starts talking, note how you guys have all watched Fauci in this position many times, right? He's been to Congress many times. I've never seen him this disheveled. That tells me, I mean, you know, that's subjective. It's just an opinion, but he is rattled here. The way he misuses his words, he misspeaks at least a few times, and just the way he fumbles around. Like, he's nervous. That's my opinion. But I feel like that does show us something.
Senator, with all due respect, I disagree with so many of the things that you've said. Gain of function is a very nebulous term. We have spent, not us, but outside bodies, a considerable amount of effort to give a more precise definition to the type of research that is of concern that might lead to a dangerous situation. You are aware of that. That is called P3CO.
We're aware that you deleted gain of function from the NIH website.
Well, I can get back to that in a moment if we have time. But let's get back to the operating framework and guide rails of which we operate under.
I don't think Fauci expected him to say that. It's pretty great. I mean, he's laying out an argument, and that just destroys his argument. So Rand Paul is at the very least being fed this information from the independent media, because that's the only place you saw that.
And you have ignored them. The guidelines are very, very clear that you have to be dealing with a pathogen that clearly is shown and very likely to be highly transmissible in an uncontrollable way in humans and to have a high degree of morbidity and mortality, and that you do experiments to enhance that, hence the word EPPP, enhanced pathogens of potential.
So when EcoHealth Alliance took the virus, SHC-014, and combined it with WIV-1 and caused a recombinant virus that doesn't exist in nature, and it made mice sicker, mice that had humanized cells, you're saying that that's not gain-of-function research?
According to the framework and guidelines.
So what you're doing is defining away gain of function. No. You're simply saying it doesn't exist because you changed the definition on the NIH website. This is terrible, and you're completely trying to escape the idea that we should do something about trying to prevent a pandemic from leaking from a lab.
Right. So you see how that kind of ends up being the argument that all we're trying to do here is sort of stop this from happening again, this accident. That doesn't feel genuine to me at all with everything we know. You can't pick and choose which data to look at. The full picture makes that an almost impossible argument, in my opinion. But nonetheless, it's fantastic to see him call out the change of the website and how this is happening in real time. And this is what we're seeing everywhere, which we'll get to after this. All the many things we've already covered. Herd immunity, vaccine, everything. They're altering things in real time and then acting like, well, we changed the definition, didn't you see? Therefore, you're an idiot. Right? We talked about this with the DNA alteration discussion. Well, it doesn't technically alter your DNA because here's the definition of that, and therefore it doesn't mean it exactly. That's I said in the beginning. Well, who cares? Don't call it altering your DNA. What this thing does to your body is alarming. That's it. It changes things in you. And they've admitted that. We just showed you another study that proved that. But because they go, well, because of this one little thing, and that's what they do. And changing them to meet their own needs. This is the real technocratic world we're seeing an aggressively happening at a very fast pace before we even get to the infrastructure they're building out. They have to do this, otherwise, I think we're breaking through the narrative in every possible way.
There's the preponderance of evidence now points towards this coming from the lab, and what you've done is changed the definition on your website to try to cover your ass, basically. That's what you've done. You've changed the website to try to have a new definition that doesn't include the risky research that's going on. Until you admit that it's risky, we're not going to get anywhere. You have to admit that this research was risky. The NIH has now rebuked them. Your own agency has rebuked them. But that's, the thing is you're still unwilling to admit that they gained in function when they say they became sicker. They gained in lethality. It's a new virus. That's not gain of function.
According to the definition that is currently operable, Senator,
that's crazy that he said it just like that, too. So according to the new thing that we just changed, you're wrong. That's your answer? So you're admitting that that's crazy to me. But see, it's interesting when he gets into why they changed it.
Let's make it clear for the people who are listening. The current definition was done over a 2 to 3 year period by outside bodies, including the NSABB, 2 conferences by the National Academy of Science, Engineering, and Medicine on December 2014, March 2016. We commissioned external risk-benefit assessment, and then on January of 2017, the Office of Science and Technology Policy of the White House issued the current policy.
And coincidentally, the definition appeared on the same day the NIH said that, yes, there was a gain of function in Wuhan.
Exactly.
The same day the definition appeared, the new definition, to try to define away what's going on in Wuhan. Until you accept it, until you accept responsibility, we're not going to get anywhere close to trying to prevent another lab leak of this dangerous sort of experiment. You won't.
And there it is again. But the point is, 2017? So he's literally arguing, yeah, we all talked about it back in 2017. It just took 4 years for it to be posted. Yeah, that really lines up. And Rand Paul, these points are impossible to miss. The same day that they say, yeah, we admit we did the thing that we don't have listed now. So we didn't do it, or this is deceptive. On its face, dishonest.
Admit that it's dangerous, and for that lack of judgment, I think it's time that you resign.
Thank you, Senator Paulin. I would like to give the time to Dr. Fauci.
Yeah, well, there were so many things that are egregious misrepresentation here, Madam Chair, that I don't think I'd be able to refute all of them, but just a couple of them for the listens to hear for. You have said that...
For the listens to hear for? You see what I mean? He meant to say for the listeners to hear. He is rattled, guys. That's my opinion. But I've never seen him do that. There's multiple things I just didn't stop for. He's making mistakes in his speech. There's something going on.
I'm unwilling to take any responsibility for the current pandemic. I have no responsibility for the current pandemic. The current pandemic. Okay? Number two, you said the overwhelming amount of evidence indicates that's a lab leak. I believe most card-carrying viral phylogenists and molecular virologists would disagree with you.
Again.
That is much more likely, even though we leave open all possibilities, it's much more likely that this was a natural occurrence.
They turned off Rand Paul's mic, by the way, in case you didn't see that, and for the podcast.
Third, you say
we tested 80,000 animals and no animals have been...
I don't know why it came back on, but you can see before he tried to speak, and it wasn't working. So it's interesting to me.
Found with COVID.
Senator Paul, the time is for...
Tested 80,000 animals and no animals have been found with COVID.
Senator
no
Paul,
animals.
The time is for...
And third, you made a statement just a moment ago that's completely incorrect, where you say we continue to support research at the Wuhan Institute of Virology.
You approved it in August of last year.
No, no, your statement says, quote, I wrote it down as you were writing. You continue to support research at the Wuhan Institute of Virology.
You were in committee a month ago and said you still trust the Chinese scientists and you still support the research over there.
Exactly.
You said it a month ago
Senator
in committee.
Senator Paul, I have allowed Dr. Fauci to respond. You've had your time. I'm going to give him
He's going to be dishonest. He ought to be challenged.
Senator Paul, we will allow Dr. Fauci to respond after you've given accusations like that. Dr. Fauci.
Well, I don't have any more to say except to say that, as usual, and I have a great deal of respect for this body of the Senate, and it makes me very uncomfortable to have to say something, but he is egregiously incorrect in what he says. Thank you.
History will figure that out on its own.
You're damn right it will. And what's funny about this is that he's proving what he's saying, and he's still saying, but he's wrong. He's lying. As he waves the data in front of your face. It's just silly. This is ridiculous. And people that are going along with this ridiculousness are either part of it or are willfully lying to themselves. It's just that simple because how obviously we're being deceived. Now, I believe this on top of that is part of that, whether they realize it or not. There's a lot of things moving, a lot of moving parts. We always have to see that. And it could even mean, like I've said before, that this wasn't the ultimate end game, that something shifted. Maybe our efforts caused problems, put a stick in the spoke, so they shifted into something else. And now it's shifting over to this, to climate change, whatever. The point is that they're constantly evolving based on how we're reacting. So we need to always be on the lookout for some new manipulation. And you know, the easiest thing to do, don't trust any of them. It's pretty easy to think about. But see, the two-party illusion keeps people invested to one degree or another, and that is how we continue to lose. This is obvious. You're being deceived. I do not think it ends with Fauci, China, and an accidental leak. I think that's ridiculous. Nonetheless, Fauci should resign. Fauci is a criminal, and Fauci should be held accountable, but so should every single other person, possibly right down to Rand Paul Seed himself, because every one of them allowed this to go forward at a time when we knew this was not happening the way they said it was. You saw people like me screaming about this right in the beginning. You saw people like admit any of the others we've had on the show that we've talked to, doctors, other reporters. We've continued to call this stuff out from day one. And it's been there. There's been enough to go, wait a minute. You know, the percentage they gave us is wrong. Wait, they used absolute risk reduction or relative risk reduction instead of absolute risk reduction. Where is everybody? Right? We've been saying these things for a year. They know this stuff. There's more going on here, and they've allowed it to happen. They've allowed you to be put on lockdown. They've allowed you to wear masks. They've allowed this to happen and then remove these things without really explaining the full breadth. The point is these people should be held accountable too. Your government should be held accountable for what they've allowed to happen to you and everything else that's going on in this country and around the world. Now, we covered this already. NIH caught quietly altering gain of function definition. This was on October 22nd. You can read this for yourself. It's There's a lot more in here than just that video and just this discussion. Here's the actual breakdown of the page. Research involving enhanced. Oh, yeah, here, I should grab this one, too, just because it's really ridiculous when you realize how obvious it is. Oh, that I, yep, I clipped it. When you realize how obvious it is that they changed these things in real time, right? This was October 19th. The same day, as he points out, they change it to this. Oh, look, it's gone. Now it says EPP research. And it goes on to say, well, like they suggest as if this has always been sort of the way. This is just a type of so-called gain of function, as if it's not even a real thing, except here it is right on their site before they changed it. Gain of function research. It's just, they think we're children. They really do. Now, on top of that, we pointed this out from day one, the change of the vaccination definition, WHO quietly changing herd immunity definition. We've been following this from the very beginning as you've been watching. Thomas Massey points out on November 1st, there's no ethical or rational basis for mandating a vaccine that doesn't reliably prevent recipients from spreading a disease to others. If a drug improves outcomes for individuals when individuals contract a disease, only those individuals or legal guardians of those individuals can make the decision to use that drug, especially if there is risk, which we know there is. Politicians and bureaucrats are not legal guardians of citizens. To accept that governments have the power to mandate treatments for individuals, differentiating from classic vaccines, which might prevent individuals from harming others, is to accept that those governments own those individual citizens. He says there is a reason the U.S. government changed the very definition of vaccination at the moment Biden announced mandatory vaccination for millions of individuals in the private sector. Right, and we've shown you this. September 2021, the act of introducing a vaccine into the body to produce protection. Oh, protection. No longer immunity, right? Because it's not about immunity. It's just about lowering symptoms and pretending like it's what we're supposed to be doing after that's what we promised it wouldn't be the case. We've already told you this, guys. Crazy how obvious it is. Now, I can't not point this out. I have to talk about something here that is driving me crazy. I think Jimmy Dore is doing a pretty good job lately of pointing out what he sees. And a lot of it is redundant of stuff that we've talked about months and months, if not a year ago, because they're stumbling onto this stuff now. But what I take issue with in this video is not that he's talking about this stuff that we've talked about from a long time ago, but that they act like no one's talked about it. And more specifically, that the person he brings on to talk about this is somebody who has been ignoring this topic the entire time until just recently diving into it. And in my opinion, grabbing a lot of other people's stuff and putting it out as if it's his own. That's what's happening with Whitney Webb and a lot of other people that we've watched happen. So I can't just sit by and it frustrates me. But there's a reason I wanted to point this out, because it leads to an interesting end game result or an argument that you probably won't feel good about. And I'll talk about it afterwards. So let's take a look at this clip real quick. And you guys can decide for yourselves.
So guess what?
Not
does. Synthesized messenger RNA that is used by the cells of the body to produce an antigenic substance, such as a fragment of virus spike protein. Moderna's coronavirus works by injecting small, so that they've totally changed the definition of what a vaccine is and what it does.
And for the record, you can see on there that it still says immune response. So this isn't even the most updated version. What we just showed you was the most updated version. So they're kind of jumping back into an argument that was made a couple months ago. Nonetheless, it's still a valid argument. The point is that it still says immune response, whereas the reality is it says what did it say? I was just looking at it and I'm forgetting. The other version was protection. It produces protection from a disease. That's crazy. But what I take issue with is that what he says next and who he brings on to talk about it.
So they've totally changed it. And I don't know if was anybody else aware of that, Max?
Yep.
Were you aware of that? That they
nope.
did that?
Nope. We all were, though. We were all screaming over here for the last 6 to 8 months about how this was going on. But nobody else knows about it.
I was.
But Max knew. Max
so
knew.
What would be your response to them doing that?
And by the way, when that actually happened, right, all the stuff we've talked about before, herd immunity, vaccine, all the changes back then, Max was still acting like this wasn't happening and disparaging people that were talking about it.
But if you read, you know, progressive media, you wouldn't know that because
no.
they've stopped scrutinizing big pharma and regulatory bodies that have been captured by it. So,
oh, you mean like the Slow News Day or Frank Analysis or any number of like a 15 to 20, 30 different people in their so-called progressive media that have been doing this from day one? I guess they don't count, though. Right. That frustrates me even from a partisan point. Like that's supposed to be his people. It's frustrating. There's a lot of people that have been screaming about this stuff. In fact, trying to get him and them to talk about it the whole time. But now they're not even mentioned. That's frustrating.
This is not the only definition that's been changed right in front of our eyes. I mean, the World Health Organization changed the definition of herd immunity to something that can only be achieved through mass vaccination in order to remove natural immunity from the equation, which, as we know from the recent Israeli study out of Tel Aviv University, the largest study of its kind, shows that natural immunity through prior infection of COVID-19 is 27 times more durable than the kind of immunity achieved through naive vaccination.
Now, just remember what I said the last, and by the way, this getting out is good regardless, but what I take issue with is where they end the argument, where he ends the argument, and the fact that what we're talking about right there is not the focal point. We've shown you the focal point, this final Israeli study that they've allowed to be talking about, right? The media talked about it. That's the only reason that they're talking. There's a 45 other studies. I've shown you the WHO. I've shown you the Lancet. I've shown you Nature. I've shown you Science Mag. I've shown you Journal of Infection. Every single one of them has been finding durable, robust, lasting immunity, and far better than injections the whole time. But since the mainstream started talking about the Israeli study, oh, okay, well, now it's a valid docking point. That's frustrating. It's about couching the argument in a way that keeps you in a controlled flow of information, whether that's the point of what he's doing or not. It frustrates me. And I'm sorry if this bothers people, but I don't usually, you'll see what I mean. Here's where it goes.
Okay, so they're not following the science. This is purely political. And it
also, as it's clear, reading, which is fine. But that the point is, a lot of people out there that have been screaming this stuff. And they're probably where they're being read from right now.
To advance a goal that is being pursued like Captain Ahab pursued the white whale by the World Health Organization's number three or number two donor. That would be Bill Gates, who just totally dictates their agenda.
And a lot of this stuff has been written about recently on the website that you can pull right from multiple things that Whitney Webb has literally written about over and over. I mean, it's like the same stuff. So not that has to be pointed out, but the reality is, guys, there's a huge grouping of people that they're acting like don't exist that have been talking about this from the very beginning, that have built the groundwork for this argument that's now being stood on. That should be pointed out. And I'm not even saying that you have to point to everybody who ever talked about it. We're talking about the foundational research that's being used to make these arguments come from people that aren't being discussed. That bothers me.
You also have last week, Jeremy Redfern, who is a Twitter user, like an amateur sleuth, revealed the NIH, after Fauci was embarrassed over gain-of-function research being carried out by USAID-backed EcoHealth Alliance. Redfern checked the NIH website and saw that they essentially had changed the definition of gain-of-function research to EPPP. EPPP. Which is
right. Because very clearly he's aware of this conversation, right? Right. I mean, look, there's plenty of other places this came from. It's interesting. I'll leave.
Enhanced potential pandemic pathogen. So they're basically juking the definition and playing with semantics in order to cover their ass. Again, political considerations are dictating the way the quote-unquote scientific community is presenting the public with the so-called science. So it's not just with the definition of vaccines. But on that point of changing the definition of vaccines, well, we know that because of lockdowns, many children missed their routine vaccination appointments across.
Oh, no. So now we're going to point out why. See, this is a nod to all the people in his community that are upset that he's even challenging the vaccine. Right? No, the vaccines are good, though. Just not this one. Right? Oh, so the very same entities that have been lying, cheating, and stealing and doing everything they can to push this, even though it's dangerous, the ones they made just before this are totally good, though. Could be. I don't know why in the world you would assume that. I think it's pretty obvious to assume if this is the same entity, Pfizer, Merck, Johnson & Johnson, the same groups we're talking about, guys, if they're the ones making the same injections you could point out all sorts of other ones from the past, whether it's HPV or even just the basics that are leading to very clear problems today. But that's not you're not allowed to poke at that right now. So it just frustrates me. That's a crazy conclusion to come to.
Across the world.
Being that because children missed their vaccination cycles, that's why children are having problems today, or they're having increased problems.
Interrupted vaccine drives in the global south, but also here in the wealthy global north, many children missed their routine appointments. But what this gaming of definitions of vaccines does is it lowers public confidence in the kind of routine vaccines that children and their take and that which their parents administer, all in the name of the only vaccine that seems to matter anymore, which is the mRNA vaccine, which has failed to deliver on virtually every promise except preventing death and severe illness.
False. See, that's not even true. The data doesn't even back that up. But you see, that's the acceptable within the mainstream argument to make right now. You're allowed to dissent to that degree. That's ridiculous. And the data has never backed that up. It just doesn't. It does not reduce your death or your hospitalization. The data seems to suggest the opposite of that. But oh yeah, how dare we, this is racism against other vaccines, right? So it's made it only the one that matters. What about all the others? How can we not apply the same logic to these same people that are willing to lie to you, to manipulate you? And the data on top of that from before on these injections show you that the same kind of things have been happening. If you dig back into the flu injection data, it shows you to a much lesser degree, but the same kind of problems that they were hiding and manipulating and combining. Same things, same people.
When you have antibodies during that limited time when it gives it to you. So it's dangerous what the quote-unquote, what the scientific establishment or biomedical establishment is doing to public confidence in science.
Well, I think what needs to be happening right now is that there's, where we're talking, the level of information that we're at today, the data we're talking about, the nature studies, these kind of things, this needs to be the current conversation. This needs to be right now what we're talking about, that it's altering your body, that it's lowering your immune system, it's removing antibodies, right? These are things that won't be discussed in that kind of conversation for 6 months or so until it's now allowed to be talked about now that it's way too late, right? We need to be on this stuff now. And things like that, I feel, are driving people into a controlled level of information. Now, again, I want to reiterate that I think Jimmy Dore has been waking up to this, and he's been continuing to talk to, but why invite someone like Max Blumenthal on to talk about something that he's only just barely getting involved in? Because it's the acceptable conversation, right? You have me on the show or anybody else in this console. Well, that's the conspiracy theorist. That progressive, slightly mainstream audience is not going to be okay with that, even though it's more accurate, more up to tune, more current. Yeah. But the reality is this is where we need to be. Otherwise we will lose. Pretty simple. Because things like this are being missed in that conversation. Jab mandates are both, well, not this specifically, but the fact of the cost-benefit analysis, the idea that this is dangerous, not just that it should be a choice, which is what my argument is regardless, but that it is actually dangerous, that people are being put at risk by taking this, which is what the data actually shows you. But you can't say that yet, not in the quasi-mainstream. Jab mandates are both unethical and fail the cost-benefit test. Jump just to the conclusion to make the point, you should read this. Governments, and this is from the Brownstone Institute for those on the podcast, governments have pivoted away from lockdowns towards lockouts. In an elegant formulation of the Premier Victoria, who has designated nearly every worker in the state as unauthorized workers who are required to be vaccinated. You see, it's just like everything else. Well, no, we're not mandating it for everybody. We're only saying that state people have to do this. And then they broaden out the definition of what that means to basically everybody. Just like everything else. Now, it says people at low risk from COVID are being excluded from their workplaces, are losing their jobs in a way that cannot be justified from a detailed examination of the evidence, this expert has to say. People who are at low risk, in many zero risk, according to the statistics. It cannot be justified as a form of paternalism. The state knows best, ultimately, that they're going to do what they want because they're smarter than you. It cannot be justified as paternalism, as the government agencies have not demonstrated an ability to weigh up all the evidence in a detached and impartial manner. They've never been capable of that. We no longer have the same level of trust in government that we had back when the seatbelts were made compulsory. Good point to bring up. Now, whether or not we actually trust them like we claim we might have before, the point he makes next is the most important to this constant argument you get about, well, seatbelts and so on. Seatbelts do not directly harm a certain percentage of the people who are required to wear them. The balance between the real risks and benefits to each age group is still uncertain. Coerced vaccination cannot be justified for the purpose of preventing harm to others, as the ability of the vaccines to prevent transmission is weak and fleeting. This is not a strong enough basis to justify infringing people's rights to bodily integrity, especially considering the rights of vaccine, the risks of vaccine injury. My stance? There is not a strong enough basis to justify infringing people's rights. That's never on the table. I don't care what you think is happening. Our rights are inherent, God-given, shall not be infringed. right there, you got all the Two Party people going, oh, you Constitution, like it's so silly and archaic, as we swear in every single person we vote for using the Constitution, and we don't pretend like that's ridiculous, right? Oh, you Republicans and your freedom. Like, that's actually an argument today. If you're Republicans and Democrats are both ridiculous today, but if you're inside that arguing the concept of freedom is ridiculous, you have been completely lost. You have been taken by this narrative and you have put to bed the very things that you feel like you believe in other contexts. You know what? All that freedom tends to just, I mean, you could point to other things we've talked about in the past, whether we're talking about abortion or anything else, immigration. Well, freedom is involved in that conversation, but we care about it there, right? But not over here as you crazy Republicans and your stupid freedom. And I'm not taking a side in that argument. That's just what one side is saying about the other. And it's ridiculous. These are things that shall not be infringed. They're just choosing to infringe upon them, which means they're still there. Your government just doesn't care. And the reality is they never really have. It says that we are in the absurd scenario where the major risk of COVID is faced by the post-working age population. The major risk is faced by the post-working age population. But governments and businesses think the solution is to coerce the working age population into getting vaccinated, even though this demonstrably will not stop the spread in the workplace, and most of them are dramatically low risk, lower than the flu. The bottom line is that an unknown number of healthy people in the low risk group may die as a result of the universal mass vaccination strategy, people who would not have died because of COVID. Now, think of the other point to go back to is that these people who are the working age population are at dramatically low risk of catching this, of dying from this. But on top of that, if they were to catch it, most of them are not even then at risk of having a severe illness. Those are two different things. How can you look at that and pretend that means we're all in danger? Lower than the flu in both regards for many of the categories. It says the bottom line is that an unknown number of healthy people in the low risk groups may die as a result of the universal mass vaccination. People who would not have died otherwise. Governments, employers, and advocates need to reflect on this carefully and adopt the more conservative model. If we are going to have a trade-off, it needs to be the most favorable trade-off we can devise. No, I don't want a trade-off at all. I want the government to get the hell out of my life. But the point here is that if there is risk, there is choice, or there should be. So regardless, if you see that there are people that could die from this, which they've already admitted, we see that if you don't think these things can lead to heart attacks and blood clots, which they've admitted can happen, which can then be deadly, yet you buy that there's no one that has died from this. It's ridiculous. But that is a risk. Even just the idea of a blood clot is a risk. Therefore, you should have the choice. I don't care how small it is, how slim the chance of you getting a blood clot is. If you can, you should have the choice. You don't get to weigh it and be like, well, there's more risk to the society, so your little risk doesn't count. Something I haven't brought up in a while, which is always still valid. And it's not just the international documentation, but specifically on an international scale from UNESCO, United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization from 2005, UN, you know, which the United States pretends to be a part, says very clearly, under consent or human dignity, human rights, the interests of and welfare of the individual should have priority over the sole interest of science or society. This is the declaration, the Universal Declaration on Bioethics and Human Rights, exactly what we're dealing with today. And they say, nope, your bodily right supersedes that of society or science. Government doesn't care, though. Who cares about that? The Israeli green passports are already expiring, and the vaccinated are becoming officially unvaccinated again. Will they be compelled to renew every 6 months? Yep, they already said they were going to do that. And before this pandemic is even finished, the pundits are looking over the horizon to the next one. It's all right there in front of you guys. The bottom line is we must avoid falling into a permanent biosecurity regime of recurrent discrimination and multiple compulsory vaccinations several times a year with mounting and compounding risks. It is time to turn our backs on the fear campaign and return to the time-honored model in which individuals consider their own risk context and make their own decisions about vaccination in consultation with their medical advisors without government interference. Thank you. There are people out there that are pointing this stuff out. And as Aaron Kairati, MD, points out, the real political divisions today are no longer left and right, liberal, conservative, progressive, traditionalist, or even Democrat, Republican. The real division is between those who will accept a technocratic biosecurity surveillance regime and those who will resist. That's funny how a statement like that before would have been like crazy conspiracy theory. It still is regarded as that by some. But behind it all, they're going like, yeah, that's a little more on the nose than I want it to be. That's crazy that that statement is so valid today, even though it's always been valid. We're watching that happen. The very term technocratic biosecurity surveillance regime would have been laughed about back on. But a lot of people are seeing this and going, well, that's literally what's happening. Maybe you can argue it's happening for your own good, but it's exactly what is being built. And he's right. I completely agree with that. This is where we are, and this is where we need to stand. This is the hill to die on, as Charlie Robinson and I just talked about. Had a great interview with him, by the way. Check the website. Bringing this over into the discussion of the children, that they're being forced to take this right now, despite what we just discussed, how it's lowering the immune system and all the negative things we've talked about. And as we played many times in the past, how even the mainstream media reported that it is, in fact, very clearly removing antibodies from your blood.
And your COVID-19 vaccine, you're going to want to listen to this. The Red Cross says anyone who has received their COVID-19 vaccine cannot donate convalescent plasma to help other COVID-19 patients in hospitals. That plasma is made up of antibodies from people who have recovered from the virus, but the vaccine wipes out those antibodies, making the convalescent plasma ineffective in treating other COVID-19 patients.
That's pretty clear. And I've played the Dr. Bauer one that he's tried to like hide behind an article. It's very clear because I already showed you the data that continues to back that up. The studies that continue to back that up. The studies that are literally saying to you, oh, look, that the antibody levels decreased after two doses. And it says, like the one I referenced earlier, decreases rapidly after two doses. And the data elsewhere backs that up too, from Israel. And we'll just keep hiding that though. But taking this into the children discussion, as we know that the CDC just apparently, according to Fox News, approved vaccines for that age. Oh, did they now? No, they emergency authorized them for 5 to 11-year-olds. But even Fox News is lying to you. And again, this is not some mistake, guys. This is willful deception. I pointed this out before. You can go back before this and you don't find this discrepancy. There's only approved and emergency authorized, and they're happily lying to you. Even down here, what's funny is it points out CDC approves coronavirus vaccine for children aged 5 to 11. But if you actually look at that article they linked to, guess what it says? The vaccine is already approved for emergency use in children. Right, so it's not approved, then it's emergency authorized. Regardless. Fox News is telling you that San Francisco will now require children ages 5 to 11 under an emergency authorized experimental injection to show proof of an injection to access businesses, 5 to 11-year-olds. I find that to be outrageous. I mean, we're talking about something, because one part of this has been approved that they haven't even released yet. They're acting like any other version, emergency authorized, whatever. It's all the same thing, right? Just force it on everybody. Gavin Newsom is already forcing this on children in California. Now, here's why that's really alarming. The New York Times points out how to get a COVID shot for your kid. Well, it says on Tuesday, a panel of experts for the CDC gave its blessing for a lower dose of the Pfizer biotech vaccine to protect your children. So already remember that this is kind of being not open. I mean, this is a change, but one you might even argue wouldn't necessitate more stifle testing, but it should. Any change should get more testing. But they argue the very, 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 very small child testing they did, which had a lot of problems they kept from your view, was enough to make sure it was safe, but it wasn't. They lied and hid stuff, which we've already talked about in previous shows. But they gave their blessing for the lower dose for children. Dr. Walensky from the CDC has signed off on the recommendations, clearing the way for the parents of 28 million children between the ages of 5 and 11 to get their kids vaccinated. But remember, they've already made the argument that kids, if they appear to be smart and intelligent, they don't need a parent's assistance. But you know why they don't state that there? Because they know that even people on their side are kind of uncomfortable with that. But they've already said that. You don't need parental consent if the doctor decides they understand what's happening. Never before in history. You can't have cigarettes, can't join the military, can't have alcohol, but you can sure as hell get an experimental injection or change your sex if you want to, too. You can go to the next room to do that. But you can't smoke cigarettes, though, because you're too young. It says, but parents rushing to make vaccine appointments are likely to discover they can't get the shot as quickly as they might have hoped. Wait a minute. Didn't we just hear that San Francisco is already mandated? They have passports and Gavin Newsom's already forcing. Yeah, they're already doing that. Okay. But it might not happen already. It says in the past, shots for older children and booster shots for adults immediately became available a day or two after the committee vote. But that's because the vaccines for children 12 and older are identical to those given to adults. The shots created just for younger children are still being distributed around the country. Vaccinations for 5 to 11 is different than vaccinations for adults. The White House COVID-19 response coordinator said, this is a new program designed from the ground up specifically for children, which we already showed you have different things in them, by the way. So it's not just a difference of size. Now it says, quote, we'll see the first sets of kids start to get vaccinated late this week. So it's not happening yet. That's interesting. Members of the CDC committee who recommended the vaccines noted that they plan to get their own children and grandchildren vaccinated, which is really meaningless. They cited data showing that for every 9 children vaccinated, children who have a 1 in a million chance of dying, children that aren't spreading this, children that have a lower than flu risk of getting this in general, 1 COVID infection would be prevented. Make sure you don't miss what that's telling you. They cited for their justification for giving it to children and their own, apparently, which I doubt would probably won't happen, that for every 9 children that don't need this, one infection somewhere in the world would be prevented. You know what they just admitted to you right there? That they're scared and they're using children that aren't at risk as a barrier protection for the adults who are at risk that they're telling you that I'd still disagree with. You're using these children that don't need this, who aren't at risk, to keep you safe. You're cowards. That's what's happening right now. They're using them as a barrier. But even that's within their narrative, to be honest, because on top of that, I think they ultimately know that it's far more, there's more happening than that. The children don't need this, and this doesn't even work as a barrier because it doesn't actually work. But realize how, if you're trying to argue this is justifiable because of the data, every child that gets this injection has an increased risk of myocarditis. Every one of them. The CDC's admitted that. I showed you on their own documentation is it an increased risk. Quite dramatic, to be honest. As we've shown you in the under 18 category, 19 expected to over 200 cases they found. That's a dramatic increase in risk that also then leads to 25 to 56% increase in mortality for that child, mortality over the next 3 to 10 years. That's a mild case. That's all there. Now, if they were to catch COVID, remember, which is a slim chance, then there's a risk of COVID of myocarditis. Except that's also not even accurate, which we're going to get into in a second, because what they're claiming is the crossover that COVID-19 has a higher risk is actually not even backed up by the data. They just lie to you. I'll show you the Israeli study that they pretend to cite, and then show you what that study actually says. It's way, way more increased than it is even in regard to what you could get from COVID. But that is not enough. 9 children to reduce 1 infection. An infection, if you're just thinking broadly, for most people wouldn't even be deadly. And yet we're willing to get 9 children an increased risk of myocarditis. How does that even add up? To date, nearly 2 million children ages 5 to 11 in the U.S. are known to have been infected with the virus, they say. With it's a PCR test, which is a dramatically high false positive rate. Most of these kids being tested after they go in the hospital for other reasons. And 8,300 have been hospitalized. Again, which is literally false, which we've shown you before. Newsweek itself called it out. Studies suggest that child hospitalization numbers and COVID are inflated. Two different studies from the Hospital of Pediatrics, not something to be disregarded by the group they're talking about, have concluded that COVID-19 hospitalizations among children have been inflated by at least 40%, at least. But here we are, continuing to cite the number that they're lying about. Guess what comes next? A third of those hospitalized were admitted to intensive care units, and at least 170 have died. Well, first of all, a third admitted to the intensive care units. Remember, that's what this is talking about, is that many of these kids were simply there for broken legs or other severe issues, which took them to the emergency room. And they got tested while they were there, and they said, oh, you got COVID too. And then it dissipated, the other thing, and they left. The COVID thing just became a number they wrote down on a piece of paper. Never affected the child. That's what this article discusses. But we'll just pretend that adds up. But here's the interesting part. 170? 170 have died. Okay. Well, what's crazy to me is they were saying 300 to 400 like 4 months ago. So how is it that they can cite, that's the CDC link they're citing right there. How is it they can go down? Were they lying before? Were they wrong? Did they not admit to you they changed the number? Yeah, all of that probably makes sense. But here's the craziest part. Here is the Wall Street Journal. I keep misciting this, I think it's Forbes, but I just forget which one it is. Wall Street Journal, the flimsy evidence behind the CDC's push to vaccinate children. Right, as right now, as they just pushed it from every possible angle. Unanimous votes from the FDA and the CDC, and everybody goes along with it. But here's their arguments. This is from a Johns Hopkins doctor. A tremendous number of government and private policies affecting kids are based on one number. And this is back before they seemingly changed that number. 335. That is how many children under 18 have died with COVID diagnosis code in their record, not actually dying from COVID, simply dying after being told they have a positive test. They could be dying from pneumonia, from cancer, from any number of other things. And that's what the Newsweek article talks about. Yet the CDC, which has 21,000 employees, hasn't researched each death to find out whether COVID caused it or not. Hasn't researched them. Without the data, the CDC Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices decided in May, and again just recently, that the benefits of two-dose vaccinations outweigh the risks for all kids 12 to 15, the same point for all kids 5 to 11. It says the doctor has written hundreds of peer-reviewed medical studies, and he could think of no journal editor who would accept the claim that 335 deaths resulted from a virus without data to indicate if the virus was incidental or causal, and without an analysis of relevant risk factors such as obesity or any other thing. The point is they didn't look into it. They just get the report and they cite it to you. But somewhere between July 19th and today, that went down to 170. Does that make sense to you? Well, who cares? Because as long as you just go along with the narrative, you won't get shouted and canceled. There's no rhyme or reason to this, guys. We're being lied to, and they're just pulling the strings and changing things and stepping left and right. They're just saying things today. How can it go down to 170 if they were claiming 340? They were claiming over 400 in some of the mainstream. Now it's at least 170. Does that at the very least show you that they're questioning some of those? Yes. The reality is, everything is questionable, and they've given you reasons from the very beginning to question all of it. Not least of which is the fact that they keep rolling back their numbers. No, it's not 3.6, it's 2. No, it's not 2, it's actually 0.5. No, it's actually 0.1. No, it's 1%. But yeah, let's keep trusting the next thing they say is absolute fact until they change it tomorrow. Dr. Matthew F. Daly, at the end of the article, a committee member and senior investigator at the Kaiser Permanente Institute for Health and Research in Aurora, Colorado, said it was important that doctors listen to parents' concerns about the safety and potential side effects of the injection. He says, quote, "It's understandable you have questions and concerns. I would encourage you to talk to your child's pediatrician. They know your child. They know your family. They can walk you through it." So don't you love how that works out? So you should be listening to them, but don't worry. Talk to your doctor. He'll explain to you why you don't know what you're talking about and they should do this anyway. That's what that ultimately means. So talk to the doctor, but then just listen to when they tell you you're crazy. Yeah, great. This shows you very clearly, guys, that this is, it's amazing we're allowing this to happen right now, despite the fact that the hospitalization data is, at the very least, questionable, that the death data is questionable, that everyone is pointing to this stuff and saying the same things. Now, there was a point that I knew I was going to forget that I wanted to come back to. Now I forget. Oh, well. Shoot, that's going to drive me crazy. There was something in here that I thought was really important that I wanted to reference. Well, I guess the simple thing is, if I'm remembering, was that they started. They've started the program at this point in places like California, and it seems that it's not available. I don't think that was the point. I'm going to move forward regardless. There's so many points flying around that I don't want to forget some of these. But going forward, after realizing that they're lying to you in every possible way, New York City starts vaccinating young kids Thursday. So that's today. So how is it possible that they can be telling you we don't have this? Well, to be clear, what they're talking about is that they have a lessened amount. Like, what they're changing is that this injection is going to be a smaller dose with different vials and so on. Now, that doesn't mean that they couldn't just take what they think is the right amount and give it to the children. But the point is, guys, that this was already set in motion before they even said it was okay. They're already beginning this before they've even given you the things they're supposed to be giving you. Big school effort planned. New York City says city-run vaccine sites will start providing COVID shots to kids 5 to 11 on Thursday, while some of the first shots in New Jersey will be administered at the VAC Center on Wednesday. Already happening. Now, more than that, this is happening in schools. Kids age 5 to 11 are expected to start their injections as part of a New York, New Jersey, early as Wednesday, a day after the CDC gave final clearance for low doses to be, again, for low dose shots to be administered that they don't have. But they can just, I guess they'll just guess. You know, sure, there'll be no mistakes like we've seen, like the administration of saline on accident or other vaccines on accident, flu instead of COVID. And, you know, I'm sure they won't make those mistakes at the Walgreens. Yeah, no worries. New York City-run vaccine sites will start administering vaccines to that age group on Thursday. Starting this week, de Blasio said every public school that serves children 5 to 11 will have a dedicated vaccination day for newly eligible students. That amounts to about 1,070 school vaccination sites in schools over the course of the week and 200 school sites daily. Each child will have a chance to get dosed, he added. To get dosed. That's just a scary way to say that, probably intentionally. Children must have a parent or guardian with them at the time. Verbal consent can also be provided. So just so it's clear, at least they're saying that you need parental consent. They've already made it clear that New York and California that you don't need that. So he says that, but they've already made like wink, wink, you don't really need it though. So we'll ask you at school. And if the doctor decides that you're smart enough, then we'll do it anyway. That's what they've said they can do. I'm just pointing it out. But so it's clear he said that you need parental consent. But inside the schools, for children that are not at risk, who they just said every 9 children stops one infection. That's not a cost, going back to the Brownist viewpoint, they fail the cost-benefit test very clearly. They're just hoping you don't pick up on that. Also, don't forget, we've already talked about this. The FDA approved the first oral blood thinning medication for children right before they did this. Not right before, but before, reasonably timely, pretty close to it. The first oral blood-thinning vaccination or medication. Now, why would they do that? Is there a reason that children especially need a fast-track drug for blood-thinning? Why would you need blood-thinning for children at such a mass scale? Maybe because you're administering something that creates blood clots and other problems? Yeah, exactly. Just like the other thing we saw, Pfizer with their blood-thinning drug go along with everything else, which, by the way, have skyrocketed like 60% since this started. I wonder why. We're seeing far more cases after vaccination than we are just because of COVID-19. That's easy to point out. They approved it for children, even though, and don't forget, we keep pointing out that this is increasing all over the place. These discussions of, oh, look, children get heart attacks too. It's alarming to me. As Karen points out, wow, Pfizer promises to reduce child COVID deaths from almost zero to almost zero, which is alarming, but it's macabre, facetious in a very important way. They're already down to almost zero. So you're giving 9 children an increased risk of myocarditis along with every other possible effect to bring it down to almost zero when it's already there. If you can't see that this is wrong, then you're not paying attention. This will upset you very. You just have to let you watch this. I'll read it first. Superheroes come in all sizes. Watch as real kids. This is Pfizer posting this. Watch as real kids express thanks to their superheroes. The 5 to 11-year-old COVID-19 vaccine clinical trial volunteers. We're incredibly grateful to the trial participants and their families. So basically saying, get the injection or be in a trial kid and you're a superhero. This is disgusting.
I'm ready to fight COVID. All of us want to be superheroes. And the most important heroes are those that help others. This year, thousands of kids like us around the world joined the COVID-19 vaccine trial.
Yeah, and some died, and many got sick. Many got booted out before they could see the second shot because it was really bad from the beginning. All that got hidden from you. It's happened every single trial.
Kid power. And when they did, they became all superheroes.
Right, so they became real superheroes. Great. So as adults, we know that that's just a narrative, but do children know that? Right, do the 5-year-olds realize that this is not going to turn you into a superhero? Do they care?
To all the kids who volunteer, we'd like to say...
Thank you!
Thank you!
Thank you for sharing your superpowers of...
Courage, trying new things.
The ability to save people.
The power to help people.
Helping.
Yuck, yuck. God, I can't even watch this. It's so unnerving. This bothers me. Bothers me. As I said, Oxford says they are at more risk from the flu. 1 in a million chance of dying, literally. And the shot admittedly increases their risk of myocarditis dramatically. And the risk of myocarditis from COVID only comes if they catch it, which is slim. This is sinister. Pretty damn clear. And all that's accurate. You could look it up for yourself and watch my past shows. It's pretty damn obvious. And since it started, here's what we're already seeing. This is November 4th, right? So This began specifically. Oh, you know what? I closed that. Well, regardless, I looked up Stafford. What was it? Staffordshire? Shoot, where was it? Yeah, Staffordshire, the location. Realized that in this location that we already see this happening. We already see 5 to 11-year-olds beginning these injections, right? This is already happening all over the place. So could this be what happened? Yes. Are we ever going to find out? Probably not, because they'll never look into it. So November 4th, school in mourning after two pupils die suddenly in 1 week. Harry Towers and Muhammad Habib passed away during October half term and were both remembered in prayers during an online assembly. Harry, 11-year-old, October 30th. He was described as a popular teenager with care and compassion. Muhammad, his 10-year-old, died on Sunday, October 24th, paying tribute to Mr. Murray. Quote, Muhammad was devout in his faith. His charitable nature will sorely be missed in all the community. It says, Mr. Murray added that at this stage, the cause of each death has not yet been determined, which is so super normal, right? That we just have no idea what caused this weird death in this child. How often, like, think back to before all this started. That was never what happened. You pretty much always get a result. What happened? Oh, he had a heart attack. He had a stroke, or he choked on something. Now most of these are like, we don't know. And it's pretty much left there. The cause of two under 11-year-old children in the process of 1 week is still undefined. Yeah, that totally makes sense, doesn't it? Out of respect for both families, we ask you not to speculate. I wonder why. There's something really crazy happening here. It's already being administered, 5 to 11-year-olds. We know this is happening. And the moment this begins, are we really going to pretend like it's not already being administered, like it already is in California, like it was yesterday in California, in New York? It's already happening. But don't worry, though, because the NHS, they don't have to do it. So we're forcing it on your children already, but they're good until the spring. It's not a joke. NHS staff won't be forced to have their COVID jab this winter. But they're claiming it'll be happening in the spring. Why? Why would you not? I mean, there's a million things I could argue. Why they wouldn't want this happening around them. Who knows why they respect the rights more of them instead of your children or you and your life? Because you're the chattel to them. You don't matter to them. If they're forcing this on your child, if they're forcing this on you to go to work or firing you for not, and they're not even forcing their own staff to do it, just like the White House is, or don't forget, they argue, yeah, we're gonna make it mandatory, but we're going to allow them to tell us whether they did it and accept their answer. That was actually what the White House said. So they can lie to you? Yeah, but they wouldn't lie, though, because they're good people. Yeah, so you're not forcing it then. You're allowing them to say whatever they want and accepting that. Can I do that? No. Can the guy over there do that? No. Can my kid do that? No. But the White House can do it. NHS, we're just going to come right out and say, no, you don't even have to do it. We'll give you a pass until next time. We'll give you a pass until we get the good ones out. This is sinister. I mean, I keep coming back to this. It is wrong. How can they force it on your children while telling their own people they don't have to? Which brings us to the increased risks of this, the dramatically increased risks. This was sent to me by Orwell in regard to the myocarditis risk, the updated signal assessment. There's only a couple things I want to point out on this. Here's the European Medicines Agency. This is from September 2nd, 2021. It says, in Israel, and there's more in this, by the way, you should dive through. And I'm probably going to go through more depth about the comparison information. But just a couple points I want you to think about. In Israel, a comparison of hospital admissions, incidences rate. Is that how you're supposed to say that? It could be a typo. A comparison of hospital admissions incidences rate due to myocarditis in vaccinees, so people who got the injection, compared to non-vaccinees, was performed in all age groups, and the data suggested a potential signal with the vaccinees. So again, this is the Israel doc data showing you clearly they found or suggested a potential signal, that a risk is what that means, a risk of myocarditis for people who got the injection. It says the Israeli interim assessment, and this has been backed up more times than I can count up to this point, was that there is a likely causal association between the second dose of mRNA injections, and remember, in Israel, it's all Pfizer, and myocarditis. Now, we've had 2 months. That's weird. So this was September. Oh, let me look real quick. Oh, shoot. It's not the... Oh, I had it right here. September. Okay, so we've had 2 months, give or take. 2 months. And we've seen multiple studies come out after that from multiple locations saying the same thing. It's even listed on the documentation for this as a possible side effect. And yet they're still going, oh, a causal, possible relationship. So just realize this is very clearly happening. This association, it says, appears stronger in young males and attenuates with increasing age. The numerical estimate, it says, is still being finalized, but is approximately between 1 in 10,000 and 1 in 6,000 second doses of vaccine. So 1 in 10,000, 1 in 6,000. Okay, so this is what the Israeli study is saying about the risk of myocarditis. Also here, it's just one of the reports to show you that pointing out the incidence rate for myocarditis were only obtained from this information, noting the following: the myocarditis diagnosis is likely to be made in secondary care, so there's a risk of underreporting. So make sure you see that. What they're reporting to you is probably not the full data, which none of it ever is. Then it goes on to say the databases that include both primary and secondary care for myocarditis and pericarditis combined, hence they couldn't be used. So they're telling you right now there's reports out there that they just couldn't even include. And that's including other things like this down here. Pleuropericarditis. So if they're just doing a broad search for only myocarditis and acting like that gives you the full picture, they know that's not accurate. There's a lot more being tied into heart problems. Myopericarditis, pericarditis, myocarditis, all these different variations, pleuropericarditis. These things are not being caught up in that net when they're only searching for one thing. And that's probably intentional. Even when you can see there are some that are just simply not even included. But it says the results showed an elevated ratio in the male age group, statistically significant, which is always important. Okay, back to the point of this, showing you 1 in 10,000, 1 in 6,000. So what they're telling you right now is, no, but, if you get COVID, it's way worse. But the fact that's not a fair argument, because you get the injection, you're immediately increasing your risk by a dramatic amount. On the other hand, you have to catch it first, which is a slim risk for most of these kids. And then you have an increased risk. But is that even true? Here's what the CDC says. Here's their risk-based breakdown, as you've seen before. 16 times higher, they say, of getting it after COVID-19. Well, look at what their data says. They're saying about 150 cases per 100,000 patients with COVID, about 9 cases per 100,000 with patients without. Now that I'm doing this, but the breakdown to me of 1 in 6,000 is a lot more in regard to after vaccination than 150 and 100,000. Bottom line is, they know that data is there. They're just not showing you. So not only is it an increased risk immediately after getting injection versus having to catch it first, there's also just an increased risk clearly after injection more so than any other circumstance. They just don't want you to see it. Now, here's an interesting example of how they're framing people who are dying from seemingly obvious vaccine effects, or possibly that the injection gives them something they then there die from, like the spike protein causing disease or COVID itself. However you want to look at it. Here's a story of a fully vaccinated air passenger infected with coronavirus is found dead in his seat after landing in the German airport following flight from Turkey. Right. Okay, so apparently, this fully vaccinated person was good enough to pass all the checkpoints, good enough to get on the plane and everything else. But because he's fully vaccinated, it probably was, we're only looking at for those dirty unvaxxers. But from the time this person got on the plane after passing those checkpoints, from the time he got on the plane to when he landed, he apparently died from COVID-19. Are we really going to pretend that makes sense? So the symptoms weren't there to be seen, that he was, so just in a process of one plane flight, they killed him? Or are they framing this as COVID-19 when it's very obviously the injection causing this? Fully vaccinated passenger. There's so much of this out there, and most of it's falling under the radar because there's so much going on. Oh, here, I do want to keep that open, actually. For those of you who know, I always have to do this because Daily Mail removes they go back to the homepage on you, and then you lose your link. But not only this, not only are we seeing these kind of weird examples, remember, we've been talking about the collapsing athlete discussion for a while now. And there's so many topics these days, I can't pull them all in every single day because otherwise it'd be a 9-hour show every day. But there's been plenty of these that we've been seeing. And I've shown you an endless stream of these. As I said before all this started, when's the last time you saw a professional athlete collapse, either severely ill or die, in the middle of a game? Olympic athletes, Olympic archers, runners, swimmers, collapsing in the middle of an Olympic game, people dying on the soccer field, people collapsing during a football game. Guys, this has happened. And we're going to pretend like it's totally normal? It's not COVID-19. These are people that aren't even sick with COVID-19. It says 24-year-old hockey star Boris Sadecki dies after collapsing on the ice in cardiac arrest late Friday. 80% of the league is vaccinated. These people aren't even allowed to be participating most of the times without having their injections. At the very least, they're not allowed to be playing without proof of not being sick. So what actually happened here? I think you know what happens here. Here's another example of somebody that they're ignoring, or in fact calling crazy, which is what happens to people like Maddie, the child who is still in a wheelchair, despite having an immediate reaction during the trial that they act like was an abdominal problem. We just talked about this. She's still in a wheelchair to this day. And they say, oh, no, no, it's in your head. You're crazy. And they put down on the VAERS report that it was an abdominal problem, that she had a stomachache. If you can't see how willfully dishonest that is, again, you're not paying attention. This has all been documented. They were in front of a state congressional body. Headline from NBC says, I became paralyzed after taking Moderna vaccine. Woman diagnosed with rare reaction. Always got to put that in there, right? Don't think I had anything highlighted in here. These are constant, guys. This is constant. Beth Edwards Mosey points out that she's been a nurse for 36 years. 35 of which have been in the ICU. She says, I have never seen so many unexplained illnesses and conditions that I'm seeing in the vaccinated. There's no end to this, guys. It's everywhere. Again, I'll be interviewing a nurse on the 6th, I believe, about her situation, how she was fired despite having a religious exemption. And they told her point blank, you don't have a sincerely held belief. She's a Christian. I mean, it's sickening that they can make that decision for her, really, as we're beginning to see that they're not letting anybody do that, which was the clear sidestep. Now, here is an example, which I will just play this one part of. You can watch this whole thing for, I think, two parts of this. This is another great video by Ben Swan on Sovereign, which is the Sovereign.media, which is the new ICE.media. By the way, in case you haven't seen it, here's the T-Lab channel. Hold on, I don't want to lose this. Oh, shoot. Oh, well. Oh, here we go. Sorry. I wanted to show you this. Just so you can see, this is the platform's quite interesting, and I think it's going to do well. Check it out for yourself. So here is a Ben Swan video on his new platform discussing the suppressed voices of the vaccine injured. Now, I believe this is from a hearing that was put on by, what was his name, Ron, I'm forgetting his name now, a politician. Now, Kelly, I actually was almost interviewing, and there was something happened. Maybe it's because of this that she decided to pull back. We were going to connect an interview. A lot of people were claiming that she was faking it. Remember, she was having the Tremor twins. They were, you know, jokingly, and, you know, trying to make light of the situation, because why not? Because you're in a very sad, severe situation. But here she is on a panel talking about her side effects and how she's being dismissed by the media, by people in the Twitterverse. But it's happening everywhere, and they're being told that they're crazy.
I can no longer cook, clean, or even pick up and hold my baby for too long. Ability to speak naturally. My happy, predictable daily life.
Once was, you're every soldier you can to take the vaccine so I can get enough data points to determine if the vaccine is safe.
On June 29th, 2021, my happy, predictable daily life came to a screeching halt. I lost my ability to speak naturally. I have become unable to walk without a walker and never know if or when the tremors will come or go. I can no longer cook, clean, or even pick up and hold my baby for too long before my body begins to shake uncontrollably or is thrown into excruciating amounts of pain. I've been to the ER more times than I can count, and as a result, have seen countless ER doctors, as well as two neurologists who have given me no diagnoses, no further testing besides regular blood work, CT scans, EEGs, EKGs, and an MRI, all of which the doctors told me came back normal. I'm hoping to share my story in an effort to give others going through what I'm going through a voice, and to show them that they don't have to be afraid. So for everyone suffering, for everyone being pushed, guilted, and frightened into taking this thing or not taking this thing, I see you. I hear you. I believe you. I love you. I am you.
Everybody knows.
It's very emotional. It's just so sad these people are being forced in this position. And people out there who believe, some of which do believe they're doing the right thing, which I don't even know how you can think that if you're attacking somebody, but they attack these people. They call them crazy because they feel that her truth, her reality, is undermining what they choose to believe right now, which is just cowardly.
Next week is his birthday. You know what? I'm going to celebrate his birthday. It was like playing Russian roulette. My government lied to me. They said it was safe. They need to quit pushing this on their children. I lost mine. Y'all need to protect yours.
It's just, I mean, the craziest thing is, regardless of whether you believe them or think they're lying, whatever, the fact that this is a real-time conversation that's being had, Ron Johnson was the politician. Just to be very, very clear, even from their side of this argument, you can't prove it's not the vaccine. They haven't. So how are they therefore being dismissed as it's not? Just like with the Bayer's conversation, if you haven't proven that it is or is not, then it still could be. And by the way, the data does very clearly show that it can cause these things. So why is it not being given any credence? Because there's a political agenda here. That just breaks my heart to watch her struggle, to watch her shake while she's even doing this. And they keep attacking these people. The government, your government. Now, on unreported truths here, it says the hospitals in Australia are being overrun, not from COVID, and no one can explain why. The hospitals in Australia are being overrun, not from COVID, and no one can explain why. Mark McGowan, the premier of Western Australia, which is almost 3 million people, in an interview with Sky News, said, our hospitals are under enormous pressure. This is the same in the rest of Australia. This has been something no one has ever seen before. The growth in demand in our hospitals, why it is hard to know. There is huge numbers of people coming through the door, so we're doing everything we can to try to manage it. To be clear, COVID is not causing the hospital crisis in Western Australia, the article reads. The state has incredibly strict border restrictions, even by Australian standards, and almost no cases. That's true right now. On top of that, as I pointed out myself, like the rest of Australia, it's very high vaccination rates. And on top of that, like I pointed out myself, I thought it was listed in here. Maybe I was in the next part. That's strange. I feel like I remember it's elsewhere. The point being that right now, deaths, cases, dramatically low. It has been from the very beginning. If we're talking about all time, I swear I saw that in here somewhere. Strange. Anyway, the reality of their all-time information is crazy low. All they argue is, well, because of everything we did, it stayed that way. And if we hadn't, it'd be crazy. Well, no, there's plenty of places around the world that didn't do anything like Sweden, didn't do even remotely what you did to make it more accurate, like Sweden. Other places around the world that aren't even involved, like places in Africa, they're just less than 10%, not even having the same problem. But here's what he actually said.
Our hospitals are under enormous pressure. This is the same in Tasmania, South Australia, New South Wales, Queensland, and Victoria. Enormous pressure. This has been something no one has ever seen before, the growth in demand in our hospitals. Why it is hard to know, except that there is some evidence that some sort of delayed reaction to COVID,
So it's a delayed reaction to COVID. That's literally there. So there's evidence that it's just a delayed reaction. That is the most ridiculous argument I've ever heard. So it's right there, by the way, 1,112 COVID cases total. And yet now their hospitals are overwhelmed with a very high vaccination rate. Right. This is what's called willfully ignoring the obvious.
Numbers of people coming through the door. So we're doing everything we can to try and manage it. In particular, in the budget, we allocated another $1.9 billion for additional staff.
$2 billion.
We allocated $3.1 billion for new capital works, and that will continue. But it is a huge pressure point.
This is while they're firing people, right?
That we're providing.
So you're paying for more new people that are complying. You're paying for it.
As much support and as much resources as we can. To meet the need. A couple of things that would help, if we could get the people who should be in aged care homes out of hospitals and into aged care, that would help a lot.
And oh, good. So they can die more rapidly, which we've, like we've seen in every single aged care home from the very beginning of this supposed pandemic. Right. That's what New York did. Right. Jamming them all together and letting in. That's pretty consistent.
There's 100 or 200 or so of those people. And there's another 200 or so people who are should be in NDIS facilities, disability facilities, who are stuck in hospital beds and they can't find a spot for them. So if we could free up those beds and get those people out, it'll alleviate a lot of pressure within the system. That is something we have taken to the Commonwealth and other states have taken to the Commonwealth because other states are going through the same thing. It would certainly help if that could occur.
There's a new adult with your voice personally
endorsing
COVID-19 vaccination. Why have you only chosen
to? I've done many ads over the course of the last 2 years. If you...
That's the gist of it. I didn't listen to the end part. But it's not only in Australia, which I'm sure you know. So their hospitals are overwhelmed. There's only been a little more than a thousand cases total since the beginning of this. And we don't know why, but our assumption is going to be probably COVID though. Yeah, that's a self-serving assumption, isn't it? Well, here we are, NPR, United States. ERs are now swamped with seriously ill patients, but many don't have COVID. Gee, I wonder what that could be causing. What could be causing that? What do you think? It says, even in parts of the country where COVID-19 isn't overwhelming the health system, patients are showing up to the ER sicker than they were before the pandemic. Their diseases are more advanced and in need of more complicated care. So you see where they're going to try to make this happen? Months of treatment delays have exacerbated chronic conditions and worsened symptoms. Oh, you mean what we were saying would happen before the lockdowns and you guys said we were crazy conspiracy theorists and you censored us for? You're now using as your argument to justify why the hospital's overwhelmed now? Isn't that perfect? It's amazing how what was once conspiracy theory is now their couched argument to make their current argument. How stupid is this? This is how dumb they think we are. The lockdowns hurt people, which by every possible measure is overwhelmingly clear. They hurt people. Not in many ways, most clear of which was that people got sicker. Not even associated with COVID-19, but also associated with whatever we're dealing with today. People got sick. People didn't get treated. People got conducted their lives that increased their risk of illness in general. But they called that crazy and said, we're all being crazy conspiracy theorists because this is the best thing safe for everybody. Save it a vector, save it a vector. Nope. Not now, though, because now it works for them. But that's also not even what's actually happening, guys. Yes, to some degree. But are we really going to pretend that it's just overwhelmed? This is because of the vaccine effects that are being increased at every moment as they roll this out. And it's undeniable correlation with Israel. Every single increase of injections increases the effects and deaths and so on. Ebbs and flows right along with the administration of the injection. It could not be more clear. Months of treatment delays exacerbated the symptoms. Doctors and nurses say the severity of illness ranges widely and includes abdominal pain, respiratory problems, blood clots, heart conditions, suicide attempts. Yeah, they kind of couch those two things in there that clearly seem to point to other things, but who cares? Not COVID, but COVID though, right? Not COVID, but because you guys didn't do what you were supposed to. No, it's quite obvious what the right even assumption should be based on the data, but they will never go to that conclusion. Oh, but on top of that, we're also still admitting in another conversation, guess what? The shielding, the whole effort we did didn't work though. Didn't actually work. Shocker. You mean the very thing we told you was the very last thing we should do, the isolation, the quarantines of healthy people that didn't work out well? Oh, gee, who would have guessed that? So you realize we're coming to a full circle here where they're going, yeah, that thing didn't really work. And we actually killed a lot of old people by putting them in these extreme isolated positions. But we're going to do it again, though. That's what's happening right now. We'll do it better next time. What's happening is people are getting sick from what they're giving them, from what they're putting them in, for how they're isolating them. And they're couching it as anything other than what's actually happening. But as I've said before, there are people that are standing up for this stuff. And we played this video before. This is the members of European Parliament, five of them, speaking out against what is happening. Doesn't mean you should be trusting the European Parliament. Doesn't mean that they are actually on your side. I should have to say that every time. But it does mean that what they're stating is actually something that we should be supporting, whether or not their intentions are not there, because this is important. Now, I wanted to play at least one part of another thing they came out with. This is This is October 29th. This was October 21st. So 8 days later, they came out with another speech. And I want to play, just want you to hear what they're continuing to say. And the media is just not even, this is members of the European Parliament, and it's just being blanket ignored. Just like everything else, just like the British Medical Journal argument about how the entire safety data integrity, the entire safety data from Pfizer's vaccine trial is faulty. That they found themselves, that it was manipulated, they changed data, they didn't do what they're supposed to, they unblinded people. All of that has been blanket ignored. Why that alone doesn't wake people up, I don't know. But so too is this being blanket ignored. So let's watch it right here. I just want to play this one part that the one that the lady speaks about, and it just shows you the sentiment generally. And I might come back to this and play it more at a later show.
Hello. First of all, thank you very much for all of you that went to great lengths to express your support to us in an overwhelmingly huge amount of emails. Thank you so much. We're doing this for you. All through Europe, governments have gone to great lengths to get people vaccinated. We were promised the vaccinations will be a game changer and it will restore our freedom. Turns out none of that was true. It does not render you immune. You can still contract the virus and you can still be infectious. The only thing this vaccine did for sure was to spill billions and billions of dollars in the pockets of pharmaceutical companies. I voted against the digital green certificate back in April. Unfortunately, it was adopted nonetheless. And this just goes to show there's only a minority of MEPs who truly stand for European values. The majority of MEPs, for whatever reasons unbeknown to me, obviously support oppression of the people while claiming shamelessly to do it for the people's own good.
Now, again, just in a brief moment, as I always try to make here throughout this discussion, every show, is she an anti-science conspiracy theorist? I mean, I'm sure they're going to make that argument. Oh, she must have gotten caught up in that QAnon Republican star. Like, that's how childishly they think today. The two-party illusionists out there that blindly think that they're doing the right thing. She is somebody who is talking from a place of scientific research. She is basing this on the data that she has looked at. Now, could she be wrong? Of course. But the simple breakdown of how childish this argument is, that all the dirty unvaxxers are all Republicans and they all don't like science and they think that you're like, that's just stupid. But this is still the basis for their argument that you must be anti-science. All those doctors and scientists and Nobel laureates, they all must just hate science secretly. I don't know how we can continue to pretend that. So as she continues to speak, recognize that she is at the very least, a person that in different contexts would be looked at as an authority figure until she says the wrong thing.
But it is not the goal that renders a system oppressive. It is always the methods by which the goal is pursued. Whenever a government claims to have the people's interests at heart, you need to think again.
Yes.
In the entire history of mankind, there has never been a political elite sincerely concerned about the well-being of regular people.
Exactly.
What makes any of us think that it is different now? If the age of enlightenment has brought forth anything, then certainly this. Never take anything any government tells you at face value. Always question everything any government does or does not do.
Did she just say question everything? I think she did.
Always look for ulterior motives and always ask cui bono, who benefits?
Yep.
Whenever a political elite pushes an agenda this hard and resorts to extortion and manipulation to get their way, you can almost always be sure your benefit is definitely not what they had at heart. As far as I'm concerned, I will not be vaccinated with anything that has not been properly vetted and tested and has shown no sound scientific evidence that the benefits outweigh the disease itself and possible long-term side effects which to this day we don't know anything about.
Exactly.
I will not be reduced to a mere guinea pig by getting vaccinated with an experimental drug. And I will most assuredly not get vaccinated because my government tells me to and promises in return I will be granted freedom. Let's be clear about one thing. No one grants me freedom, for I am a free person. So I dare the European Commission and the German government throw me in jail, lock me up, and throw away the key for all I care. But you will never be able to coerce me into being vaccinated if I, the free citizen that I am, choose not to be vaccinated. Lastly, I would like you to think about this one. The compulsory use of the digital green certificate undermines everything that Europeans stand for. It violates constitutionally guaranteed fundamental rights, and it constitutes the first step towards the insufferable Chinese social credit system. I will never stand for this. I will never put up with this. Thank you.
Well said. I'm sure I'll come back to cover some of the others as well. But I mean, now look, you could easily point out something that I always caution as well, always, regardless of whether I think I don't, this feels genuine to me. I've been wrong about that in the past. But as I always point out, you know, could this just be the false resistance? Are we seeing this on a global scale now? We see it in the U.S. where you got the, you know, whether that's what you think of Rand Paul or not, like that's just an argument to make that that could be a false back and forth that's meant to look like people are actually resisting and really just ends up in the same direction. Could that just be a global version of this playing out? Did they just drive you in? They look like they're resisting. And at the end of the day, it just drives you into the passport system in a different way. Sure. But that's not, this doesn't, this, I mean, the only reason it makes me skeptical is because of how many, like, they would call conspiracy buzzwords she hit on there. I would call truth, right? She laid out a lot of really important things that you rarely hear spoken in the elitist circles, right? Maybe she does watch our show. Maybe she does watch independent media. And the bottom line is, regardless of who said that, hooray, spot on. Bully, bully, bully. Good stuff. I wish I could be there screaming and shouting after she said that because it was exactly what we're talking about. Is she anti-science? Or is she just somebody who's able to show discernment and look at both sides of an argument or all sides of an argument? Interesting. Now, keeping this in mind, I want us to think about the way they're going to be driving this forward to justify where they're going next. Right, because we're watching this dissolve in front of us right now. We're watching the Pfizer's results come out, and maybe this is an example of them trying to shift to a different direction because they're failing. I don't know. At the end of the day, it seems like Moderna has suddenly become another focus. Well, Moderna might do this. Here's the story from Moderna: booster may actually protect against variants. Yeah, that's ridiculous, especially since it's the booster based on it's the same one you got before that didn't do that. But yeah, a third dose might actually do it. Nope, no, it won't. There's no scientific reason that makes sense. I said I highly doubt it based on the original strain, which all of these are, there is no reason this makes sense. Hence the may, because sure, it may do it. It may make you fly. Who knows? But do you know what has been shown to do that thus far for sure? Your natural immunity that they're ignoring. You've seen this before. We've talked about this study right here. Ultra-potent antibodies against diverse and highly transmissible SARS-CoV-2 variants. The study we're talking about identified 4 antibodies from early outbreak convalescent donors. So people who got sick back in 2020. And you could read the data for yourself. They have potent antibodies against 23 variants. Variants which popped up after they got sick and recovered. Meaning, including variants of concern. That means logically, as it goes forward, if they've already done with the next ones, the next variant will be working as well. But that doesn't, because that doesn't make sense in regard to how they're arguing their so-called immunity works. If it's only, and this is the why I had this up here, based on the sequence for the Wuhan HU1, it's based on the spike protein of just that strain. That's what it is. You could read all through this for yourself. This is the same document we were looking at before about Comirnaty. All of these are based, as I've shown you many times, on the Wuhan D614G strain. And here on the Journal of Infection, they go on to point out that infection-enhancing anti-SARS-CoV-2 antibodies recognize both that strain and the Delta variant, which means there's a risk of antibody-dependent enhancement. right? So if you are taking something based on the original strain and you come up against the Delta variant, well, as it says in the study you've seen many times, these infection-enhancing antibodies that can create not only still recognize Delta... Oh, that was the wrong spot. Right here. Eight, antibody-dependent enhancement may be a concern for people receiving vaccines based on that original strain. Okay, so why aren't they talking about that? Is that a concern? Of course it is. Respectable outlet pointing out real science, peer-reviewed. Who cares, though? So, yes, it's based on the original strain, as all of these are. And yes, it is being put out, and they're telling you it's mostly Delta, and they don't concern themselves with what this the peer-reviewed research said could happen? Is that trusting the science? Okay, so the reality is that this is what's happening with natural immunity. Science.org. Multiple studies on this have pointed this out. This is very clear. It's not happening on the other side. So they go, well, just take the booster from Moderna. That might do it, though. It won't. All the data, there's nothing that backs that up other than a wishful thinking. It may do it. It's just crazy how they keep driving this in. But what's interesting on top of this is this ultra potent antibody conversation came up. It was August 13th. August 13th. Telling you that these ultra potent antibodies that you have in your body because of natural immunity are very clearly working against all the variants we're dealing with. Okay. Interestingly enough, the very next month, look at what happened over here on Science Daily. Ultra potent antibody against SARS-CoV-2 variants isolated. From where exactly? Doesn't seem to get into that. Technology developed at Vanderbilt University Medical Center has led to the discovery of an ultra-potent monoclonal antibody against multiple variants. They were going to start giving people COVID-19. But wait a minute, I thought that the injection was safe and effective and totally working for everyone. But we're going to make up all these different things like the Merck pill we're going to talk about next that we all need to make this work. But I thought it was already safe and effective. It is safe and effective. Does it work? Yeah, it works perfectly. So why do we need the pill then? Right, like the logic circles around. If you actually ask them, does this work perfectly for everyone? Yes, it works perfectly. So then why do we need something else? The point I want you to ask yourself, or the question is, where do these ultra potent antibodies come from? Well, we know where they came from. They came from people with natural immunity. And now they're using that and packaging it and making it into something else like this Merck pill and jamming it down your throats from Big Pharma. How about you don't need that? How about you just need your own body? Your own immune system that they're also, remember, destroying by giving you the ejection. The alterations after vaccination that lead to the destruction of your, or the diminishing, the hurting of your immune system that leads to a more vulnerable state of your immune system. It's all pretty damn clear. But I think it's funny that they're just trying to market and patent all the natural things. And it's interesting that the things they're patenting as the next step for making this work better are the things that your body was already doing. That's why they don't want you to know that, though. And the Merck pill, as we pointed out many times, molnupiravir, right? The one that is basically doing the same thing as what things like ivermectin are already achieving. Yes, it's not marketed as an antiviral, but all the studies we've shown you 100 times over already tell you that they found very... I mean, look, I'll just search for the first one that pops up. Let's see what I grab. One was it that was on this topic? This might have been one of them anyway. Oh no, I thought so. Hold on. There we go. One of the many, by the way, from August 2021. Ivermectin as SARS-CoV-2 pre-exposure prophylaxis method. And they go in to talk about how it works against COVID. It helps decouple the spike proteins. It has antiviral properties. I mean, there's multiple studies that have come to the conclusion that it has surprisingly sound antiviral properties specifically against COVID-19. But what do you hear on Twitter? There's no evidence it works against COVID. You guys are conspiracy theorists because that's what the media says. Meanwhile, here's a pill that does exactly what we're finding they do. They think you're children. Now, to finish off, we have some discussion about the community, and I just want to wrap this up on showing you the deviations they're already doing that have already happened. Here is a breakdown of all this information from the community and Pfizer Biotech COVID vaccine page. Now, what's interesting I want to show you, first of all, is you've seen these two documents. This is only on archive right now because they don't exist anymore. This was the sheet that we kept showing you that updates, you know, every... So a couple times a month. This one was for healthcare providers and administering vaccine, healthcare providers. The other one was for recipients and caregivers, right? We've gone over this many times. And this is where we keep going into the breakdown of the pregnancy information and the mix and match stuff and how they show you that it's not safe. There's not data for it. What I want to show you is today, since they've brought on the new ones, right? These new ones that they've changed after the changing everything. Here's you can see the link for those that on the podcast. I've got the link already in here on the URL on the search bar. And I'm going to click it and watch what happens. Like, just so you can see again, going to this one, these are the same links. Here's the link right here, 144413. This one is 144414. Okay, now if you go to those links today, which you can see right there, there's 14413. Here's where it goes. Oh, what weird. Back to the main page, which doesn't link to this. It links to the new ones. Now, why would you do that exactly? Because before, they've just updated it every time and just updated the page, right? Here's the other one, 1114. Same thing. Back to this. Now, you would think maybe the link is there. It's not. I've checked every single one of them, and only the things that go that they have are to the new stuff. I'm just going to close these real quick since it's the same page. So taking that in mind, understanding that they've now seemingly removed these pages unless you have it archived, let's look at those pages. So why would they do that? In my opinion, they did that to hide the background of what has changed so far, because a lot has changed with this new manipulation. So now this one, you can see on this page, it breaks down between healthcare providers for 12 years or older, purple cap, which is this one, right there. And then it has healthcare providers for 12 years of age and older, gray cap. Oh, that's interesting. So they got two for the same grouping. Why would that be? Well, one is must dilute. The other one is no dilution. And then it says this formulation is not yet available in the United States. Well, that's interesting. Is that Comirnaty? Is that the one that they're not? I mean, it's interesting, right? There's differences. See, one is this one, or rather this one that is not available yet. And then one is this one. And we'll get to those in a second. Then they've got breakdowns from 5 to 11 for healthcare and recipients and caregivers. Okay, just the point is that's what the information is showing you're supposed to look at. Now, here's what it says. I was looking up, I was trying to find out, I saw a claim that there was an increase in the amount of polyethylene glycol in these. I wasn't able to confirm that. From what I can tell, based on these sheets from as far back as you want to go, all the way to today, from 5 to 11 or 12 and up, it seems to continue to say, right here, that it's the same amount, 0.05, right? So here we go. So this is actually, this is interesting. Did this just change me since we started? October 29th? It doesn't look like that. Well, here, we'll get to this. This is the same point. They're different, and that's important to see. Now, this is the one they said was lower, but I want to point something out to you. Here is 5 to 11. Get this up first. Okay. So here is 5 to 11 today. And you'll note the addition of trimethamine, which we've talked about. But you can go back and find that it's not on these. I just want that to be very clear for those that were questioning that from the very beginning. These are the ingredients from before they changed this, and you do not see that in there. It won't zoom in for me anyway. But on next one, you do. Now let's see what else we find in there that's different. Was there one? I forget it. Let's just go forward so I don't waste too much time, because I forgot. I thought I had these highlighted. Regardless, an additional ingredient that should be concerning for you, especially since we've talked about things like this, that there's problems here. This is new, but we've talked about the past ones that show you things like it should be intravenously injected, except they're arguing this shot doesn't do that. They're arguing that if you take thromethamine, that you should be monitored the whole time. That's not happening. Here's something else that's slightly coherent pointed out. From this location, you can see that it says clearly that it should be stored at 20 to 25. Freezing should be avoided. Here it is right here. Trimethamine injection should be stored at 20 to 25 degrees Celsius. Freezing should be avoided. But as she points out, Pfizer is supposed to be stored at below 70, right? I guess that doesn't matter though. Right? Who cares about the things that might not work out? These things are relevant. It's crazy to me that we're not talking about this. Now, going to the next one. See the top so you can see it. Meant to have it up there. We have 5 to 11 for healthcare providers. Now it says 0.02. milligrams. Also has these, but note that it also has a bunch of different stuff than the one that they're showing you for you. Isn't that interesting? This is for the healthcare providers. But now taking it over here to the 12 and up, same point. Polyethylene glycol, no tromethamine. Now, why would you add it to children's alone, right? Why would you add this seemingly potentially dangerous thing that's being used in the wrong ways that is specifically for things like with blood problems? Why would you only add it to the child version? That's concerning to me because you can see that it's not there. There is no tromethamine. Here it is on the other version. Again, with a much fuller listing. But here's what's interesting is they do decrease the amount of polyethylene glycol for the children. And this is going to be relevant in a second when we get to one of Whitney Webb's articles. There's manipulation happening here. What this shows you is a conscious awareness of problems that they're not admitting to you are happening. And they're trying to play the game with the substance to make it not so bad. Now, here's what's interesting to me. This is the one that they're talking about as not being available that needs to be diluted or that has no dilution. So now they're even changing what this basically tells you is they're about to be releasing something that doesn't need to be diluted. That's different entirely. Now it has it. So let's make sure we're clear about that. So now the adult version that they haven't released yet, the one that they're injecting in people's arms right now doesn't. So we're told. The one that they haven't released yet that they're about to does have it. So what are they seeing and what's happening that they're trying to fix? The reason that nobody talks about this is because the media does not discuss it. Also, just a little quick side note, notice that it says modified messenger RNA, mod RNA, right? That's what it is. It's not mRNA. It's modified. It's nucleoside modified messenger RNA. It's not natural. They say mRNA, which is inaccurate because they don't want you to know that. Now here is something that Whitney just wrote about that I've been meaning to get to that's really important, which seems to suggest one of two things. Either they're using a different product today that they tested one thing and they gave you something else, which by the way, historically has happened more than once. 76 swine flu is a perfect example. Or they lied about doing that to hide that they're still using an illegal patent. Either way, this is an alarming situation where we're having people that we're being told to trust aggressively lying to you. I believe it's on the side of using something different. Now it says in June, because the point is they had to get away from the legal challenges that would have come along to their profits. In mid-June 2020, researchers at the NIH and Moderna published a manuscript preprint for preclinical data for Moderna's COVID injections. This preprint described the vaccine as employing a delivery system covered in a patent owned by the company Arbutus Biopharma and described the results of that vaccine in tests on mice. As discussed in part one, Moderna has long been locked in a bitter legal dispute with this company, which has threatened Moderna's ability to ever turn a profit on any product that relies on that patent that they are using regarding lipid nanoparticle delivery systems, which we know is the backbone of this whole thing for its mRNA products. Moderna has claimed for years it was no longer using that delivery system on which it once entirely relied. We know that's not true, with Bansal even going so far as to publicly call it not very good. However, Moderna has provided no real evidence that it no longer relies on the technology covered in that patent. They're clearly still using lipid nanoparticle delivery system. They just claim, in this case, that it's different. We're not using your patent. Or rather, that we're using something different entirely, so therefore that claim is not even valid. But in the June 2020 manuscript preprint from the NIH and Moderna provided evidence indicating that the same delivery technology that had caused major toxicity issues in multi-dose products Moderna had previously attempted to develop was also being used in Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine candidate. So first, this is clear. The data backs up that this is the same thing. And as I've said many times, they never even tried to explain why the thing they were using before that was causing the high amounts of adverse events has changed. The problem, as I've said simplistically many times, the increased amount of lipid nanoparticles to increase the delivery efficacy of the mRNA instructions was the only way they could make it work. But the higher the lipid nanoparticles went, the higher they saw an increase of side effects. And then that was the reason these things failed repeatedly, at least in many cases. And then they just did it again and it worked and we're working and we're using it. Hooray. It all worked, except it didn't though, because we're seeing a unbelievable exponential increase in reported effects. Dramatic. More than the entire system combined thus far in 1 year. I don't know why they can't acknowledge that. I mean, I do know they don't want to. But they're lying and saying they're using something else. Or, I mean, my gut tells me strongly that this was using a different substance to get away from the legal challenges, and they just covered that up. It says, yet when Moderna's chief corporate affairs officer, Ray Jordan, was challenged on this by Forbes, Jordan asserted that the preprints data had been generated using a formulation of COVID-19 vaccine that is not the same as the vaccine itself. Here's the actual article. In a statement to Forbes, he describes data generated using a preclinical research formulation of SARS-CoV-2 vaccine that is not the same as the vaccine itself. This is Forbes, for those that might dismiss it if it wasn't on mainstream media. Quote, while the authors of the preprint, this is the quote from Jordan in his own statement, while the authors of the preprint use the term mRNA-1273 for convenience of the reader, so in other words, they lied so you could understand it better. The preprint does not describe the cGMP process by which we make our messenger RNA and lipid nanoparticles or the final drug product composition in our commercial candidate. When asked if Moderna would provide molar ratios at which mRNA-1273 encapsulates itself and lipid nanoparticles, he said, nope, we're not disclosing our proprietary ratios this time. Great. So you didn't do anything then, and you're just using something else so you could sidestep the patent. But the problem of the incredibly high adverse events that have happened every time before this are still very clearly there. And no one cares. Back to her article. Points out, this is well, the same thing he just listed off. When Forbes asked him, he basically flatly denied it. Despite Jordan's claims, a Moderna preclinical study regarding its COVID-19 vaccine was published a month later. And that July study noted that the Moderna vaccine used lipid nanoparticles as described in that 2019 paper, which we all know now, which in turn reveals that the lipid nanoparticles in question were the same as those used in the June study. Remember my entire discussion on just nanoparticles. Not just lipid nanoparticles, but nanoparticles as a category. Their own research shows that this can be very damaging to your body. Can cause cancers, cause all sorts of things, reproductive problems. And yet here we are using nanoparticles in an increased way in every possible injection and every day in children and adults. Yeah, who cares about all that stuff? An entirely separate conversation, mRNA by itself in the way they're using it modified can cause the same problems. But who cares about that? Because it's all vaccine good. Those things are all easy to look up. How many rare problems? Those aren't even rare, by the way, but how many small problems can you pile together before this obviously becomes a huge red flag of problems? Yet, if we take Ray Jordan at his word with respect to the preprint published in June, Moderna appears to have engaged in rather slimy behavior. If Jordan was telling the truth, it appears that the July study, which appears to use the vaccine candidate containing the same lipid nanoparticles as those described in the June 2020 preprint, also used a formulation not consistent with the company's commercial vaccine candidate. If so, given that the July study was the same study referenced by Moderna's controversial May press release tied to insider stock trades that we've just forgotten about, Moderna appears to have used, quote, positive data generated by a vaccine candidate other than its commercial vaccine candidate to boost stock prices and ameliorate the company's financial situation while also generating millions for executives. This, of course, says nothing about the separate but critically important issue that the vaccine candidate used in these studies, including the NIH study, is not necessarily the same as the commercial candidate used in the trials to claim that it's safe. It seems that the only reason that Moderna would make such an outrageous claim to Forbes would be to distance its COVID-19 vaccine from its past controversies that largely have their root in Moderna's lipid nanoparticle-related problems, which it had claimed to have already resolved. It is not clear if the motive behind such a gambit is principally related to the legal dispute with the company, Arbutus, or the past safety issues Moderna encountered with multi-dose therapies. Now, we've gotten into the patent conversation many times, and the idea that there's a weird kind of shadowy, off-the-books agreement, and we don't really know the breakdown. So they can come out and claim, yeah, we settled it, it's all good, and everyone's quiet. Everyone has, you know, non-disclosure clauses. We see something much more alarming happening here. And the data we've already discussed thus far backs up that they are very clearly changing things, right? I mean, whether it's Moderna or Pfizer, they're altering these things in real time. Taking this to the next step, though, just to add to this same point, this is in the community discussion, but it says two active substance processes have been used during the development. Process one and process two. This was on the Moderna, this is on the Pfizer one, right? This is happening all over the place. The argument that they're using one thing to study and one that they're putting out historically has happened more than once. I don't know why we would trust them now. I've played the swine flu discussion many times, and it ends with the same conversation, that it turns out that they switched it out. They sold Americans on one thing, and the last second they switched it out. Didn't safety test that one. And they admitted to that. Guess who got in trouble? Nobody. And finally, another expose article. 100% of COVID-19 vaccine deaths were caused by just 5% of the batches produced, according to official government data. An investigation of data found in the U.S. in the VAERS system has revealed that extremely high numbers of adverse reactions and deaths have been reported against specific lot numbers in COVID-19 vaccine several times, meaning deadly batches of the experimental injections have now been identified. What's perhaps more concerning is that the deadly lots were distributed widely across the United States, whilst other benign lots were sent to just a few locations. The implications there are clear, but that's just basic data. So just because the valid information you can prove points in a direction that seems to suggest what they would call conspiracy theory does not then make it fake. The data supports that obvious reality that some were put out in specific locations while others were widely distributed. And the ones that were widely distributed seem to be the ones that caused the most amount of problems. And that's not because it went to more people, because that's addressed in the article. Here's what it says. The reports pulled from the database, and you could verify all this for yourself directly from VAERS. And they never make the argument that these are reports. That's it. Reports and safety signals. The reports pulled from the database were ones that had been submitted up to October 15, 2021, and they included all adverse reactions reported against Pfizer, Moderna, mRNA, COVID injections, as well as all adverse reactions reported against the influenza vaccinations, which were used to generate a control data set. And you'll see what he means. The VAERS database showed a total of 1,608 adverse events reported against the flu vaccine alongside 15 deaths and 73 hospitalizations. The total count of lot numbers returned was 494. The lot number is a specific string of numbers and letters that tracks a specific batch of vaccines from production and into a person's arm, and it is usually found on a vaccine label or accompanying packaging. Except for a few spikes, the number of adverse events per lot number was generally the same in regard to flu, with no more than 26 reports being made against a single lot number of influenza vaccine. For those on the podcast, there are graphs here you can look at. The links will be in the show notes. Now it says the above chart shows the count of lots right here by number of reports of adverse reactions per lot for the influenza vaccines. Now it shows that 33% of the lots had only a single adverse reaction report made against them, while just 0.6% of the lots had at least 20 adverse reaction reports made against them. Now, what's interesting, and it goes on to say, 97% of the lots were associated with zero deaths, while 13 lots were associated with a single death, and one lot was associated with two. Now, the idea, just making sure, I guess I can finish these parts. What they're trying to do here is create a base to compare the COVID-19 data to. I would argue, though, that what we're looking at with flu is not the normal situation. I would more so argue that we're just seeing a smaller version of the same deception happening with the flu. Because doesn't that sound a little bit lopsided, where you have 33% of it happening, you know, but then only 0.6 has almost 20 adverse events reported against? It seems there's still a focal point of these. Just bear that in mind as we go forward. Now it says 97% of the lots associated with zero deaths, while 13, so a very centralized point of these lots, had most of the deaths. Then it says the VAERS data shows that 44% of the lots were sent to just a single state within the United States, while a further 17% were sent to two states, still flu, 10% to three states, 5% to four states, and 3% to five states. Were sent, and 2% to six states, excuse me, and just 0.4 to 12 states. All the above data is used as a control data set to compare to the VAERS data for Pfizer injections. But again, I argue that this represents the same sort of deception, doesn't it? The weirdly enough that certain batches seem to be the focal point of the problem, even if it's a much smaller problem. Consider that though. But comparing this as it is, as if it were a control group, because it's the only thing we have to use, to where we're at currently with COVID-19 is going to shock you. The VAERS database showed a total of 171,463 adverse events reports against the Pfizer COVID vaccine, alongside 2,828 deaths, 14,262 hospitalizations. The total count of lot numbers returned was 4,522. This data alone shows that there have been 106 times as many adverse reactions reported, 189 times as many deaths reported, and 195 times as many hospitalizations reported due to Pfizer COVID-19 jab than there have been due to all other influenza vaccines combined since the beginning of this system. That alone is crazy astronomical. But all they're going to pretend is, oh, it's a bunch of fake news, and we just never verify because that works for our narrative. It says, we do not have reliable information about standard lot size, but news articles indicate an average lot size of 1,000 vials. So, you know, being full, they're being clear. All we can we use to base this on is what the mainstream media is reporting, which, by the way, in their context, is always reported as fact anyway. Now, it says the highest number of adverse event reports made to VAERS against a single lot number of the influenza vaccine was 26. Which makes it all the more shocking to discover that the highest number of adverse event reports made to VAERS against a single lot number of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine up to October 15th was 3,563. And that's not an anomaly. Thousands of adverse events reports have been made against a single lot number of Pfizer COVID-19 vaccines numerous times. And unfortunately, the Moderna COVID-19 vaccine hasn't fared any better. And again, these graphs are here. You can see what I'm reading, breakdown. The VAERS database showed a total of 188,998 adverse event reports against the Moderna vaccine, alongside 2,603 reported deaths, over 10,000 reported hospitalizations. A total count of lot numbers returned was 5,510. The data alone shows that there have been 118 times as many adverse events, 174 times as many deaths reported, 140 times as many hospitalizations reported due to Moderna's jab than there have been due to all other influenza vaccines combined. The Moderna jab fared even worse than the Pfizer jab in this department, with the highest number of adverse events against a single lot being a staggering 4,967. The above chart shows that the count of the lots against the range of adverse events reported per lot of Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine, the data reveals that 2,908 lots, 64%, had just a single adverse event report made against them, which, by the way, only means reports, which, remember, as even HHS and Harvard has told you, is under 1% of the total. But whilst two specific lots had over 3,000 adverse events made against them. Very interesting slant there. It says, shockingly, we can also see from the data, again, for those people that are, oh, fake news, this is their data, if you care to actually look at it. Their data shows that we can see from their data that 30 lots of Pfizer vaccine had between 1,000 and 1,499 adverse event reports per lot. Another 20 lots had between 1,500 and almost 2,000. And another 23 lots had between 2,000 and 2,500. This suggests that there were a small quantity of dangerous batches of the Pfizer injection and a large quantity of seemingly harmless batches of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine. Now, follow along here. It says, but the investigation of VAERS data also reveals that reported deaths due to Pfizer vaccine were, again, only associated with certain batches of the jab. The chart above shows that 96% of the lots of Pfizer vaccines had zero death reports made against them, meaning that 2,828 reported deaths were associated with just 4% of the lots of Pfizer's vaccine. The same can be seen for Moderna. 95% of the lots had zero deaths, meaning almost over 2,500 were associated with only 5% of the lots. The Veyers investigation found that specific batches of Pfizer's and Moderna's injections were distributed to between 13 and 50 states across the U.S., and had an unusually high number of adverse events reports and deaths compared with lots that were distributed to 12 states or less. As you can see from the above table, 4,289 different lots of Pfizer's vaccine were distributed to 12 states or less, recording 9,141 adverse reports against them alongside 99 deaths and 657 hospitalizations. This equates to an average of 2 adverse reports per lot and 0 deaths per hospitalization. However, a further 130 different lots of Pfizer vaccine were distributed to between 13 and 50 states across the U.S., recording 166,170 adverse event reports, 2,799 death reports, almost 15,000 hospitalization reports. This equates to an average of 1,278 reports of adverse events per lot. The data therefore shows that each lot from the 130 different lot numbers of Pfizer COVID vaccine distributed to more than 13 states harmed an average of 639 people, average of 639 times more people, hospitalized on average 109 times more people, and killed on average 22 times more people. The most harmful of which is lot number EK9231, causing over 3,500 adverse events. The real point not to skip over here, guys, is the ones that they gave to most places seem to have an exponentially high amount of the problems. The ones they gave to specific locations seem to be very, very low. And they did break this down based on, you know, that if you gave it to most people, there'd be more included in that. They did include that in the conversation. Remember these ones they're talking about, EK9231. You should have a right to know what lot it's coming from, guys, before you take something, if you're crazy enough to take it. The deadliest of which is lot number EN6201. This is deaths. This is in regard to hospitalizations or adverse events. This is on Moderna adverse events. The most dangerous one is lot number 030392. I'll let you read these for yourself. Second most harmful batch, listing them all off. I'll skip past that so you can read them for yourselves. Their conclusion, the investigation of Veyer's data reveals several concerning findings which warrant further investigation. But it also leads to questions of why authorities within the USA are supposed to monitor the safety of COVID vaccines have not discovered this themselves. The data clearly shows that these injections and their campaigns have been significantly more harmful and deadly than the influenza campaigns. This fact alone begs the question as to how the FDA Advisory Committee or the CDC Committee can vote in the case of FDA 17-0 or unanimously in favor of approving this for 5 to 11-year-olds. They either don't care, don't know, or are lying to you. Dr. Eric Rubin of Harvard said, "We're never going to learn how safe the vaccine is unless we start to give it. And that's just the way it goes." Right, we reported this. So we can't use ivermectin because we don't have enough data. But because we don't have enough data for these injections, we should start using them to find out. Make sense? Why is it that certain batches of COVID-19 vaccines have proven to be deadlier than others? Why is it that the most harmful and deadly COVID-19 vaccines were distributed across the entire USA, whilst the least harmful and deadly were only ever distributed to a few states? Was this done on purpose? I mean, you could pose a lot of things. I want you guys to come to your own conclusions. It could be that there was something given that wasn't it could be saline. A lot of people argued this. Given to certain locations, to certain people. It could be that this is a control where they're testing in certain locations, and that's why in their contracts they won't allow you to import from somewhere else, even if it was given to you for free. It's for you to come to your own conclusions on. But the reality is this is data that you can look at for yourself and very clearly suggests that they ignored that certain batches are more dangerous. And if you want to lean in more to a more sinister possibility, that they were intentionally giving things that were more dangerous to certain locations. Now, it says a Pfizer whistleblower from Kansas manufacturing facility did, after all, reveal that people are being made to sign off on things that normally they wouldn't. And they wonder why their employees won't take it. And then they wonder why their own employees won't take it, is the point. So there's plenty of people in these Pfizer and otherwise that are saying no to this. But they're signing off on things that they don't normally wouldn't feel good about. We've seen many people talk about this, but we can continue to ignore that there's a... Try to think of another analogy, but just a waterfall of nonstop insiders from all these companies, from hospitals, from doctors, from nurses that know this stuff that are saying there's something wrong here. Now, nonetheless, here is what they're telling you. This is actually, this is how stupid they think we are. Like, this is the real, one of the most obvious examples of how dumb they think we are. Because it's basically telling you not to do your own research. Now, where have we heard this before?
You're having a reaction. You gonna be fine? Hold still.
Wait, what brand have you been?
I don't know.
What's in it?
Medicine.
Medicine? How long is it research for?
I don't know.
What are the stats from Europe?
You could die.
What does Joe Rogan say? Culture.
We don't question the science when our life depends on it. So why question it when millions of lives depend on it? Science has our backs. Get the vax.
Yuck. God, that's just pathetic and gross. And there's your example for how Joe Rogan is used against you, even though he doesn't probably realize it. Which is not even his fault if he doesn't realize it. I mean, it could be to a large degree if things he talks about or things he doesn't talk about. But whatever. The point is that that's how that works, right? He's put forward as the one guy saying what we're saying in a much deeper context, and we're discussing and we're researching and we're having multiple doctors on to discuss and we're looking at the data to back it up. You know, that is how it gets couched. Joe Rogan, horse paste, and you're all stupid. That's how it's supposed to work. But think about how ignorant this is. There's so many things to point out through this process, right? First of all, what are we saying? That first of all, that having an anaphylactic reaction, which by the way, the injections have caused all over the place, but they don't talk about that, is the same thing as taking an experimental injection? Right. So you're having an immediate, dangerous, life-threatening reaction. And in that case, you stopping and going, wait, let me look at it. Yeah, that would be pretty stupid. But when you're over here going, I'm not sick. In fact, the data shows me I'm not even in danger. Let me know what the ingredients are. You're so stupid. That's what they're saying. Oh, wait, I want to know what's inside it. You're a dumb conspiracy theorist. Science has our back. Get the facts. Yeah. Science, is it a person? So science is one entity, just has our back. Like, this is how ridiculous, this is childish. But of course, even in any situation, if you're not in immediate danger, but even then, if you want to, it's your right to ask questions. But on top of that, they keep going, well, bottom line is, not to waste too much time on this, is they want you to think that you asking questions about whether or not this is safe, whether or not they have ingredients, whether people in other countries have different things to say about it, makes you an ignorant conspiracy theorist. And that asking Joe is just a way to undermine that valid concern. Remember, as we told you, the mainstream articles are saying, don't, New York Times, doing your own research is what conspiracy theorists do. That they want you to, as I've said from the very beginning, to them, blindly trusting authority is now doing research. That's one of the many definitions that have been altered in their minds and otherwise throughout this whole process. I think that was the only other point, you know, what's in it. Like, we shouldn't care what's in the thing that we're about to get, even though we're not currently sick, right? How long was it researched for? Right. Who cares? Just take it, you stupid conspiracy theorist. I mean, it's just so stupid. I don't know who, I know children that would laugh at this. Now, finally, same thing. I don't want to lose the article. Thousands of Australians with unpaid fines for breaking COVID rules are right now having their homes seized, bank accounts raided, and licenses canceled as governments chase their money that they're owed. Money owed for what? For mandates that aren't legal, for things that they put down under a guise of false information that we've proven, and now they're strong-arming people that are there, that they sell you are in a pandemic, that they're struggling because of everything that's going on. Their jobs are broke. Like, you create lockdowns that destroy their income, then you charge them for doing things that they shouldn't have to do or not doing them. Like, this is what I keep calling a self-fulfilling prophecy. Remember in the beginning where there was moratoriums on things, and now we're past that. Now you're a dirty unvaxxer, so now we're going to seize everything from you. Welcome to technocracy. Welcome to the biosecurity state. This is going to happen everywhere if we don't stop it. It's already happening to some degree. Why? Because they didn't want to have a medical intervention. Because they went outside without a mask on. Oh no. We've seen this everywhere. They're going to continue to force this down your throats and take what they want from you to drive in what they want to create. A docile, populace that is willing to acquiesce to whatever they say is necessary because danger, even though it's not even verifiable or even there to begin with. Unpaid fines for breaking COVID rules, seizing their homes. Now, what are they going to do? Now, where do they go? Who cares? They're on vaxxers anyway, aren't they? Does it even matter? Now, here is a, now, the thing is, especially for the podcast, I have to say it if I'm going to play it. It doesn't matter where this is coming from in the context of the point that we're making right now. It always matters. But as I've always said, if it's true, it doesn't really matter if you're making the point specifically to what they're saying. You should always consider with a source, always. But my point in saying this is I'm about to play this to you, and what he says is the most logical, valid, rooted in facts, rooted in history, rooted in everything that is will be dismissed as stupid Trump and Fox and whatever because it's on Fox News and because it is saying something. It's coming from an angle that a Republican is saying this, and that can't be true because we know Republicans are all fascists. That's the absurd nature where we are. The government's fascist. You're all being fascist if you support either side of this, in my opinion, right now. But where it's going, and that's because it all started with the Trump's campaign, it all started with the Republicans that created the whole thing, and now they're walking it back and acting like you're on your side, and now Biden picks it up, and they're driving it forward. The lockdowns themselves, the Authorization Production Act, all these things were fascist actions. All of it. But now it's just on the working for the Republican side to make it look like they're pointing back. Anyway, the point is that what he says here is absolutely true. Listen to this, because this is a valid point, and I think this is so interesting to watch how they respond on the, quote, other side of the argument.
Your basic, fundamental human freedoms, because he doesn't like the decision that you made. I will say this. If you believe that your basic liberties are predicated on the consumption of a product from a giant pharmaceutical company, you are a fascist. And I mean that to everyone on the panel, everyone listening at home. If you believe that someone does not deserve basic liberties unless they consume a product. No, actually, I do.
What is fascism?
Why don't you define it for me?
Yeah, what is fascism?
Define it.
No, we're not going to get into a definitional
word
here.
No, hold on. You just told me I don't know what fascism is.
Which means you do know what it is. Excuse me.
Since I don't know what fascism is, can you tell me how Mussolini defined it? He defined it as a merger between corporation and state. These are not businesses deciding that they don't want customers in. This is the government telling businesses that they have no choice.
Yeah.
This is discrimination under the law. And it's interesting that these so-called progressives don't care that this is going to disproportionately affect minorities and immigrants. Oh, all of a sudden, that's not an issue, right? Having to show ID for voting, that's fascism, right? But this isn't a problem.
Excellent point. Just like my body, my choice. And this is not supposed to be a partisan argument, guys. It flip-flops like I've always shown you. It just so happens in this situation that we're one of them is made out to look more ridiculous, just like it has always gone, right? That's always how this flip-flop has gone. I pointed this out for decades. But the point is, what he says is absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt, spot on. Completely. And it's even more embarrassing that she tries to, you know what it is, and then refuses to define it because she probably doesn't know how to define it. It's obvious that this is what's happening. And they're forcing this on everybody, and it's being covered by politics. But there is good stuff happening to finish this off, as Quebec drops the vaccination mandate for healthcare workers. Now, that doesn't mean it's going away. It does mean, however, that this is a positive step in the right direction. As it says, the province will abandon the measure altogether. Why? The healthcare network can't afford to lose the thousands of non-vaccinated employees. There you go. Exactly. Way to stand up, Quebec. It's a model for everyone. If we resist in enough numbers, they will crumble. And more so specifically, I mean the businesses, right? The people that are basically enforcing this for the government, even though most of them don't want to, just like he said, is when you really bring it down to the bottom line, that most of them won't undermine their own profitability or their business model to sell a political narrative. So here we are in a situation where the hospital's going, look, we can't function unless we do this, so we're going to pull it back. Now realize that they are requiring testing every like three times a week, and it's right now only for healthcare workers, as it says down here. Of course, this is only a partial win. Unvaccinated staff will be obligated to get tested for COVID three times a week. Those who not comply will be suspended without pay. So I simply argue it's still a win. As I said, it's still a solid win. Yet there are many other battles at play here. They need to stay. We all need to stay the course. If they will crumble for the mandate, they will crumble for the testing, guys, if resisted in mass. So the problem is, as I said, the same weak point, the question is whether those workers will stand their ground. Because right now you have a lot of these workers that may simply just be resisting the vaccine mandate, but maybe think we're in danger and they'll take a test. So the problem is that if we can keep that resistance, it's the same point. They can't function, so they'll stop the mandate. They just shifted to a lower degree of the mandate. Well, then you got to get tested then. Well, no, we still disagree. Give it a week, give it a couple days, and we're still resisting. They're going, okay. We obviously need you. That's why we pulled this back. This is a model that we need to emulate, guys. We need to do this. They cannot function without you. If you stand up in enough numbers, they will crumble. I cannot say that enough. Stand up. Resist. There's plenty of people leading the charge for you right now. If I were in a position where I was going to be fired, I would be one of them. Stand up. You're not alone. And finally, to end the video, which I thought was really, really important and powerful, an official SOS from Australia. Our government has unleashed a war on its people. We are no longer one and free. We are a people whose rights have been stripped away by tyrants. We are a land where democracy has fallen. Now, I don't necessarily agree with some of the political arguments, like whether we were ever a democracy or they were ever a democracy or whether there was ever a real thing. Nonetheless, the argument is sound in regard to where we are. So I'm going to leave you with this video, guys. Very important to understand what's really going on. And especially for those in the Australian part of the world who have kind of continually been arguing that this is just isolated special locations, which it is always is to some degree. I think we all need to take a step back and see that this is a worldwide thing. Yes, it's more severe in some places, but it's not a far stretch to say that we're in an authoritarian situation everywhere. We need to see that. So we need to come together, all of us, and every single side of this and every part of the political spectrum, and simply realize that it has always been them versus us. The government subjugating the people. It's always been the case. We are just finally beginning to see that to a really large degree. And if we don't capitalize on that awareness, they'll swing us back in with another Russiagate, another QAnon, another January 6th, and everyone gets swung back in their political, because even people like us that are in this are seeing this, they know they can get to you with wedge issues. You may be in this community and just really care about immigration, and they'll grab you with one thing from the border. And, oh, I get pulled back in. That's how they do this. That's why we say question everything. But be open to all possibilities. That's the other part of that. It's just too long of a tagline. Be open to everything, but question everything. It's never been more important to do so, guys. Now, thank you all for tuning in today. I'll leave you with this video that's very important. Please stay tuned to the end. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
Let me paint you a picture. Australia, once known as one of the safest and freest countries in the world. A land of spirit and ceremony. A land of opportunity where the hopeful came for a new start so their children could be free and prosperous. Where the battler had a chance and poor men made good. A land where you were free to explore your surroundings. A land with room to spread one's wings. A land of brotherhood, celebration, and connection. A land where you came to visit and didn't want to leave. A land of privacy rights, medical rights, freedom of speech, freedom of movement, freedom to protest, freedom to worship, thanks to their sacrifice. But something happened.
Today is the first full day of the New World Order.
We've got to accept that this is the New World Order.
The New World Order?
And the Australia we once knew is no more.
Lockdown 6 was announced on August 5.
It is no longer the land of the young and free. It is now a land of division, blackmail, coercion, discrimination, and medical apartheid.
Get away from me!
A land where movement, speech, religion, and opinion are no longer free. Protesting is illegal. Police must enforce corrupt policies to keep their jobs.
as I won't be a police officer after the end of this interview.
Police shoot protesters in the back while they are running away.
This is f***ing Australia!
Doctors and nurses cannot speak. They will lose their license.
I can't really talk about that.
People have lost their jobs because they don't want the injection. Children are missing school and attempting suicide at a high rate. We need to show our papers to go shopping.
If you want freedom, get the jab.
We can't travel across state borders unless we apply for permission to. Members of Parliament are censored and defamed.
100% of those studies,
it's a conspiracy theory.
Pregnant women are arrested for a social media post.
Search warrant.
Search warrant for what?
Activists who fight for democracy are imprisoned.
The moment you're under arrest for incitement.
Our human rights are gone. Our human rights are gone.
It's time that we take off the COVID blinkers and look at what's happened to our once great and free country.
Australia can no longer fight for itself. We have been silenced, assaulted, blackmailed, and psychologically damaged. We tried to fight this battle alone. The government has instilled so much fear that we have lost our vigour to fight. We are a broken nation, and although we will never give up, we need your help to continue our fight. We need help from our international friends. We are seeking your support to apply political and economic pressure on our leaders to change the destructive path that we are on. That is why we are organising a worldwide protest, with Australia excluded, in support of our plight for freedom. This is an official SOS from my beautiful country. We plead with you to hear our cries for help.